We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the Gator Nation Football Podcast with your hosts, Alan Williams and James DeVirgilio.
This place is an insane asylum in the swamp! Oh my!
Now we know we're just a bunch of average stiffs.
Welcome everyone to the Gator Nation Football Podcast presented by BetUS. I'm Alan Williams. I'm here with the man himself, James DeVirgilio. It's Georgia week, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We're going to get you ready. We had a off week. Hopefully you guys rested, relaxed. I spent the weekend in Oxford, Mississippi. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. James, good to be here on a Monday afternoon with you, buddy.
It's great to be back in the studio with you. Alan, I can't wait to hear about your weekend. As most of you know, Alan and I don't talk about our football weekends until we get in the podcast studio because we want to keep everything fresh and conversational as it's occurring for the first time. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's one of the few places I have not been to in the SEC, and it's high on my list. All right, Alan, as always, if you like the content on this show, follow us on social media, sub to our YouTube channel where we do film reviews each week. Become a patron on Patreon. Join the patron family where you can give us a dono. And then here's my weekly shout out to Be Red and Bama Shane for helping us get this podcast to all of you. So during last week, we had a little bit of a Twitter, just a very small thing on Twitter where some people felt like, Alan, our AR-15 dono was some sort of NIL issue, that we were potentially using AR's name to generate buzz, which all of you know, of course, is completely not the case, totally not true. But there were enough people suggesting these things that on this very podcast, you longtime listeners know, we really just try to stay above the fray. We don't talk about other people's shows or other people's podcasts or other people's stuff or other people's writings. We just try to deal with our analysis and do the best we can to leave the rest behind. So in honor of that, Alan, I've just ditched. I decided we're just ditching the Warfel Dono, the Trask Dono, the AR. They're just gone. They're not there. So now it's small, medium, large, XL, XXL, Hundo Bomb. So am I caving to the no fun police? I would like to think that I'm not. I would like to think that we don't want to cross any wires. And if anybody thinks in a day and age where you're using a player's name on a donation thing that that's crossing a line, we'll avoid the controversy. So with that behind us, we have some small donos. A level up from Eric UF. Thank you, Eric. And then Alan, Brett Boncory, a member of the original thread, our football thread, coming in hot, first-time supporter of the podcast here with an annual small dono. Big welcome to him.
Yeah, what's up, buddy?
Then right behind him, Bob Coleman, a defensive end for the Gators, coming in with an annual small dono in the late 60s, wrote to us, loves the show. Great to have you aboard, Bob. Several former players, actually, Alan, enjoyed the show, which is always fun. Coming in at large donos, Joseph Pera, he's new, along with William Bars, brand new in the large dono category, and in the XXL category, a level up to the XXL category, which is $20 a month, Derek Taylor, still sitting on the throne, the big homie, after his dono of donos last week, announcing himself to the GNFP nation.
Let's talk about those other dono legends, headed up here by Lil Payton, Constantine, 00, Alexander Leventhal, Diego Rivera, Bill Hood, James Newton, Nathan Jeter, Stash Me, Bobby Boucher, Frank Marcellisi, Mike Wechter, Tim Kaine, Nicholas Isaac, Mike, Mark Jackson, Tim Hondrick, James Truitt, Gus O'Leary, Brad Wilson, Mark Mitchell, Chris Folsom, Dr. Matthew Galloway, Aaron Jeter, Jason Landry, Michael Reeves, Jason Johnson, Zach Sparks, Cooper and Kylie Craig, Mark Rubenstein, Tyler Rummery, and Craig Scarrato. Thank you to each and every one of you. Those are the legends. So, no game the previous week. I think you went to probably the pumpkin patch, James, you know, laid out in the sun, did some casual hangouts.
Yeah, I went to Halloween Horror Nights, actually, in Orlando.
Good job.
Also known as the pumpkin patch. There was a pumpkin-themed haunted house.
Okay, good job. Kind of a lower-key college football weekend for a lot of people. Not so this week. Huge week in college football headed in. A lot of rivalries taking place, including our own. But before we get into the game itself, let's talk about the fervor that surrounds Gator Nation right now. Now, as usual, it's centered around one Dan Mullen. Had another press conference today. And so there's not a lot to talk about. There's no game. So, of course, we're going to talk about the press conference at least a little bit. So Dan's asked, of course, about the quarterbacks and what's his intention. And as we would expect him to be, rather vague, evasive, says nothing is really going to change. You know, it is what it is. We'll probably play both guys. When pressed about a starting quarterback, he kind of defers or demurs. Thoughts on this? It's kind of expected, though. I didn't really think he was going to name a starter, but he has mentioned playing both guys. How are you feeling about that?
I don't like it, obviously. And if you listen to last week's podcast, we went on and on and on about all of this. So if you want to catch the in-depth conversation, check out that episode. Most of you probably have. So the highlight version here is I don't like it. I know you don't like it, Alan. I don't expect my coach to transparently lay out every tactical and strategic decision they're going to make. But as we talked about, I think this is another page in the Dan Mullen book of how to make your fan base extremely frustrated
and neurotic.
And yes, and just really poor. And he went further, you know, the comments, I'm going to read them now. Dan Mullen asked about making a change at quarterback. He says, not really. We're going to continue playing them the same way. Follows that up with asking if Georgia has named their starting quarterback yet. When they said no, he said, that's shocking. They're the number one team. And then he says the starter is the person who plays the first play of the game, hasn't decided what play we're going to run first. Maybe come out in the wishbone and have someone else be the starting quarterback. So this is like this is sort of what he does when he's answered this question before. But it's funny, Alan, if you read Kirby Smart's comments to compare and contrast who he's selecting as the starting quarterback, they make way more sense. He's basically saying JT Daniels last week was able to throw pain-free. We got him involved in drills. This week, he's got to prove he can do all the things a quarterback has to do. Move in the pocket, get rid of the rust. Essentially, whoever wins practice this week is going to be the starter. That is a genuine, authentic answer, and I also think it's true. I think he knows JT Daniels is better than Stetson Bennett, but just because JT Daniels is healthy and hasn't played in 3 weeks while Stetson's played well, he maybe doesn't just give him the mantle against a Florida team that I think Kirby thinks he's going to beat with either one of them. I understand those comments. I don't understand Dan Mullen's comments. And again, his analogies, his metaphors, they're weak. They're not intellectually sound. They do not make him look intelligent. They make him look foolish. And I'm sick of it, as most of you are. And so that's, I think, where it goes. I don't think neither you or I, Alan, are frustrated if a coach doesn't want to tell you every move he's going to make. That's not what this is about. There's a million ways you could handle this. And he almost always wants to handle it in the way that makes people as frustrated as possible, it feels like.
Yeah, this is an interesting place because, Kirby's an interesting example. Not that I follow Kirby's every word, but if this was a situation we had a starter who was injured and a backup, that's actually probably reasonable. And two, you wouldn't want to say. This is not really the scenario that we're dealing with. We're dealing with a QB controversy, like who is actually the better player. And here's where I think Dan is missing the mark. Let's say he is Kirby Smart and things are rolling. Or, I don't know, maybe pick somebody who hasn't had QB issues in the past. It would feel like, okay, this would be a small thing. I wish he would handle this thing differently, but in the big scheme of things, it's very small, right? It's nitpicking, right, about how he handles the media. But I don't think he realizes the media is a conduit to everybody else, because I think he thinks he's sparring with the media, when in fact he's needling the fan base, because everyone is kind of freaking out that you're going to do the wrong thing. So Now, maybe it's a chance to be cagey and like hide information, but you could also put everybody at ease this week. And I'm sure that's not his biggest goal. His biggest goal is to beat Georgia. But there's a piece of the puzzle here that he's ignoring, which is how do you deal with the people who employ you and support you? And he's missing that for sure.
Yeah, and I think lastly on this one, you and I, Alan, are both big commitment people. You know, we think that committing to things is a better result. And I think you can commit to a quarterback and then have to not play him anymore. That's part of sports. But there's a level of committing that puts your team's focus and mind at ease. Let me tell you what's happening to every player on Florida's roster right now. They all have friends. They all have family. They all follow the program. These quotes come out, and what do you think happens? Friends, family, etc. They contact these players, and they say, hey, what's going on? Who's going to play quarterback? Rather than your coach coming out and saying, look, we're going to select the guy who's best in practice, and if that's AR, he's going to take every snap. And if it's Emery, he's going to take every snap. Fine. A lot fewer questions come through the system in that regard. So I think it creates a distraction when you choose to live your life in gray areas, whether it's dating or parenting or career. You want to take committed stances where you can, letting people know, I'm going to commit to you to do the job right now because I think you're best for it. But keep in mind that your performance on game day is going to dictate whether or not a change is made. And that is entirely reasonable. You're not unwise for starting a quarterback and then pulling him out. It doesn't mean you were wrong. Being a coach is giving players a chance to play the games and observing their performance. And somehow it's like Dan Mullen feels like the game is played in the offseason, during practice, with seniority. I had a couple of people send me a good article on Dan Mullen's history, kind of trying to say, why would Dan Mullen be like this? Well, if you look at his own career path, Alan, he didn't really become anything in college football until he was a senior. And so perhaps there's some maturity bias he has. But whatever the case is, we talked about it a lot last week. We're talking about it right now this week. Clearly, I think the act, if you will, the show that he's putting on out there, it's worn very, very thin because of what you said. There's not a lot of trust. He's going to actually make the right decision. Who cares what he says if his actions were making the right decisions? But there's a lot of data to suggest these decisions are very tough for anyone to define. And now, Alan, as we kind of predicted, it's not just Gator fans anymore. A tremendous amount of national pundits have weighed in on Dan Mullen. And it's almost like overnight, it's flipped to like, wait a minute, this guy should probably be on the hot seat. And a lot of things he's saying don't make sense. And is he the only person in the country that wouldn't play Anthony Richardson? So he's put himself into a really interesting corner. And this Georgia game is setting up for a game where what if he starts Emory Jones and AR plays like 20% of the snaps? I mean, I can't imagine what that may look like. Not only to Gator fans, but to the national media.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough look for him. And I hope for his sake that he doesn't do that. Honestly, I would like to see him continue on as a Gator coach and figure it out. But it's going to be heavily, heavily against him if he does that. So interesting little internet sleuthing by a couple of people. I read it a few places, I think. Andy Staples had an article about it on The Athletic, though. Last time, Dan was in a similar situation with Dak Prescott. He was similarly evasive. And he said, basically, he was going to start Tyler Russell, the incumbent, the Emory Jones in the situation. And he ended up starting Dak Prescott. And Russell played a little bit because the game was kind of wonky. But Dak was just started and then started from there on out. Maybe it's a similar situation where he's just saying this and he's going to do the thing we know he should do. So there's a little bit of history here. It'd be interesting how that plays out if Dan picks up on that or not. I don't know how that would affect him if he sees that being circulated as well. But there, so it's not like he hasn't done this before. He's been presented with this almost exact scenario and he ended up playing the right guy. So that's a check mark in Dan's favor. There you go.
Yeah, well, there's one. We'll hope.
Also, people were calling for Dak to play earlier in that
scenario. I was about
to
say, the flip side of that story is that it took until game four, and Dak was vastly superior in every game he played, much like the situation we're having now. And again, at some point in time as a coach, wins and losses, they're important. They're what you're essentially getting evaluated on. And when you're just reducing your margin for error to the smallest level, you're actually costing your football team games, and your job is to not do that. Because you're waiting too long to make changes, you're going to run thin in the fan confidence.
Right. Bank. He also made another comment I thought was interesting. Like he was more concerned about like this particular game than how it sets up for the future, something along those lines. And I understand that. And like, you've got to focus on the game. You can't always think about like, what's this going to mean for us 5 years down the road? It's like, well, if you make that choice, but you lose the game, it doesn't do you a lot of good. But if you aren't thinking big picture, at least a large part of the time, right? You're recruiting into the future. You're thinking about where's the program headed. If you're not handling your personnel in that kind of way too, that's extremely myopic. So, all right. Speaking of coaches, a lot of Gator Nation has pre-fired Todd Grantham. They're with us now. A lot of people asking us for our defensive coordinator picks. I'll just say this for me, and I think it's the same for you. I have not done the legwork necessary to give you a top five of who's the best DC out there. Also, we're halfway through the season. There's some guys who might be interesting now, but you get to the end of the year and you go, actually, I don't know if I would hire that person. Their team went off a cliff or whatever. Maybe it feels like smoke and mirrors right now. I assume you're in the same spot in terms of canvassing the country for defensive coordinators?
Yeah, absolutely in the same spot. We've done this before, so rest assured, if you're anxious for that, we'll give it to you. We do it every year. We did it last year when I fired Grantham for the second time.
Now
this
and you had a couple guys that you liked. You're willing to leak it out there.
We named the top five, but I have to take a look, and I want some more data. It changes. Some of the guys I liked last year actually got hired and went places, and they've been given chances, and we'll talk about them. But regardless, I will give you that list. We will give you our list, but we're going to let some more time go by. There's no rush because we're not going to hire anybody right now. And I know everyone likes to talk about who do you want. On this show, we try to just make it more analytical. And the quite frank answer is I haven't had time to do the analysis right on who I would like. So I'm not just going to spitball names out there that people say or parrot. I'll look at it and I'll tell you. I'll get back to it. But I do like the conversation you're framing here, Alan.
Yeah.
Which is the profile of a defensive coordinator. So since we're not going to right now go look at who this is, who perhaps is the general profile? What would we be looking for if we're trying to find someone to steer?
I can go first on this.
The program. And yeah, please launch us into this combo.
So I think it's interesting as we've talked about it. Like, there's a lot of names that people will throw out, I think reflexively, because they're connected to Gator football, a Charlie Strong or a Will Muschamp, people who've been successful DCs in the past, who may have been failed head coaches now. And I would say I'm not super interested in those type of guys. Someone who's the game has changed a lot in the last 5 years. And I want someone they don't have to be necessarily young. Like, I don't need them to be like 28 years old, right? That they're like fresh and hot out of the oven. I need the hot guy. But someone who's shown that they're a little more, their best years are ahead of them for whatever reason, right? So that's really important. And also, I think for this staff, they need to be somebody who is an ace recruiter. And that's a tough combo, right? Now, we are Florida. We can hand out the bucks to anybody. The big bucks should be able to lure somebody like that. But I think you're looking for both those qualities. Because if you're in a different kind of staff who was like killing at recruiting and your DC wasn't really charged with that, you could just hire the guy who's just an X's and O's guy and, you know, feel good about, as long as he wasn't a negative in the recruiting arena. But that's what I'm looking for. I mean, there's schematics and stuff that I would maybe like or not like, but I think there's a larger array of people I would be comfortable with. You know, we've talked about Mike Elko at Texas A&M, who runs a way different system than somebody else. There's different ways you could do it, and I might have preferences. But the larger boxes I want to check is a guy who's a forward-thinking guy and an ace recruiter.
And I think that's true. The recruiting part is secondary if your coach is an excellent recruiter on his own, because he'll be the recruiter. The head coach should be your best recruiter. That's one of the problems with Florida, is that's not true. Therefore, I think you do need a little bit of the Steve Spurrier, Bob Stoops relationship. We've talked about Bob Stoops in his own right, excellent recruiter, comes onto the Spurrier staff, really turns the defense around the corner. And that is what led to, in my opinion, I think a lot of other Gators fans' opinion as well, Spurrier winning a national title, is he had somebody that was equal to him on the defensive side of the ball. Now, that's very hard to find. In the modern era, Alan, it's even harder to find because people get promoted faster. Now, this to me is a sign of market efficiency, which is why I fire people faster. There's a lot talked about how long should you keep a coach? Are we firing them too quickly? And I always like to retort with, if you think we're firing people too quickly, you should see case studies where there's a lot of Lane Kiffins, where they sort of like get fired from jobs and they kind of make it again. There are hardly any Lane Kiffins where you get fired out of the NFL, you get fired out of USC. then you start working your way back up. That almost never happens. Typically, a guy gets fired and he never comes back to that position again, which is how it typically works. So what I'm saying is, if you identify nowadays a really good defensive coordinator, oftentimes, if they want, they're gone within 1 or 2 years. Look at Florida's best DCs. They're all gone. They're head coaching. Dan Quinn winds up coaching in the NFL, right? Jeff Collins winds up coaching on his own. These coaches are gone very fast. Whereas in the Stoops era, you could often hold a DC for 4 or 5 years before they went somewhere else. So market efficiency is moving these guys faster, which means for this case, for Florida's case, for Dan Mullen's case, he needs to cash in immediately with a DC who's a splash on the recruiting side because he has to have that. And then he does need a DC profile-wise for me schematically that is a modern game DC. Dan Quinn, I thought, is a great example of this, right? Dan Quinn works with the Seahawks, one of the best defenses in all of NFL history, and he's gone on record heavily this year talking about how they had to have a hard look in the mirror at what they were doing, and they changed a lot of it. A lot of their core philosophies went away. How they produced one of the best NFL defenses is no longer what they're doing now. Back-end coverages, how often they play man, how often they handle things, how they pattern match, they changed a lot of it. And so it doesn't matter what your age is, it matters what your mentality is. And Dan Quinn is proving he's malleable. He's not just going to do the same thing he did. And I think, Alan, we've covered this a lot. There's an age that tends to, I'm going to say sub 45, that tends to be much more fluid with how they view football because the game rapidly moved into high-speed chess where it was largely checkers with a little bit of chess before. Those minds are going to constantly be this way. Monty Kiffin was a guy who was like this until he was, 80, right, as a defensive coordinator. There's plenty of guys in the NFL that are still
as long as you're still excelling, like that's fine.
Correct. So I think you hit the nail on the head there. People always want young, young, young. I don't care about the age, but it's the mentality. Are you still looking at the field? Are you looking at the chess pieces? Are you thinking of what teams are trying to do? And are you adjusting your defensive scheme to fit the modern football game where we know and have chronicled from day one Grantham is the total opposite. And there's a lot of Granthams in the world out there in football. I don't want any of them. I want somebody who's more of that Dan Quinn mentality schematically that understands where the game is going. And here's the fun thing, Alan. I obviously am a big fan of playing press man defense for a higher portion of defense than other people would be. You still have to run zone and everything else. But I'm also someone who can get behind multiple defensive styles. There's several different ways to stop teams on offense. The most important thing is that you teach your style well, that you have tactical schematic plans for how you're going to handle various teams' offenses, that you get your defense to line up correctly formation-wise and execute your plan. If you do that and you have superior talent at a school like Florida, Alabama, Georgia, you're going to be good year in and year out. Even if there's some minor discrepancies in how we might want to handle third down and 8, right? So I like this question with all that to say that, yes, I think we both agree that Dan Mullen has to have a high-level recruiter DC. You could make an argument maybe he has like a co-DC that's a phenomenal recruiter and mixed in with a really tactical, brilliant guy. Probably pull that off. I think we're saying there has to be somebody on that side of the ball that's high up, that's a great recruiter, and you have to have somebody who can fix these glaring deficiencies that Florida has and move them into the modern defensive football game to take advantage of talent that Florida already has that I think we've chronicled as largely being wasted on a Saturday-by-Saturday basis.
And Florida's shown they're willing to pay a lot of money for a defensive coordinator, and this is should be a – basically, there's very few jobs that you wouldn't move up to. Now, Mullen famously said when Jeff Collins left that it was a lateral move. There's almost no lateral moves. Now, the problem is if Dan's a little bit in the hot seat –
that is a problem.
Then you're less, it's less attractive, but money talks. For a lot of these guys, if it's roughly equal, they might not want to jump ship, but so that lowers your bar there a little bit. But it shouldn't be hard to attract one of the premier guys here. And so it's just about identifying that guy and making a move.
Yeah. And even with a sinking ship of, let's say, Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen's profile is that he lets the defensive coordinator do whatever he wants to a criminal level. With Grantham. So if you believe in your skill set, you may say, look, Mullen might go down. But if I spend even 1 year in Gainesville and I make this defense a solid defense on film, that's going to launch me to where I need to go. That's all it takes nowadays in the modern game. It only takes one season. Look at Joe Brady. One season of solid work as a coordinator at a big school, and you can jump into the stratosphere. So I think the risk reward is worth it for a lot of guys. Now, not every guy, but a lot of guys will look at that and think, even if it goes down, if I do my job well in 1 year, I can launch myself to some place that I might not be able to get to otherwise.
And there'll still be some talent there. And I think as well, Florida will be at baseline decent on offense. So if you are confident in your ability to come in and create a high-level defense, the team is going to be good enough that you're not going to get fired outside a crazy scenario. So that mitigates that because you do have the freedom. The coach isn't going to like kind of meddle with what you're going to do. And if you think he's going to do well enough on offense, especially if there's an Anthony Richardson playing, then that kind of goes, well, he's kind of on the hot seat right now, but if I come in, we're going to be good again. And that kind of removes that quotient. Okay, you ready to talk about a little bit about Georgia? I want to just kind of gauge you here. Are you hyped at all for the cocktail party?
I'm not hyped. Hyped is not the right word.
You're unhyped?
Yeah, I'm unhyped. I think I'm like a lot of people are. You know, again, we say this every week, Alan. I feel like the show, if you want to accuse the show of anything, you try to accuse the show of being like too real or perhaps negative or not optimistic enough, which I think is a fraudulent label because oftentimes we're way more positive and optimistic on all sorts of things that sort of get lost because I have been myself, Alan, of course, generally, you know, down stock-wise on the Mullen winning a championship train. Not that he could win 8 or 9 games, but sure, I'm a wet blanket if you look at the start of this podcast and I said, look, there's some questions he has to answer. If he doesn't answer them, I don't think we're going to win a title. Some people can view that as what they view it as. So hype for the cocktail party. What an interesting game this is. It feels like on one hand, I really want to watch Richardson play some more, which is great. But on the other hand, it's just another decision that's made in keeping Grantham for this game that is so frustrating for me that it's hard to like get hyped. Like, what am I hyped for? I know what I'm going to see. Trash defense, stupid stuff going on. And it's not about the wins and losses. It's like I don't have any hope right now that something's different until we have a new DC. And then I can have some new hope again. I can evaluate some stuff. I can get excited about who it is. So right now, I feel like Mullen is just wet blanketing all of us. Like there's no hope for anything other than maybe Richardson playing a great game, which I will enjoy and love. But the future is disconnected. That's what I want to say. Florida's future right now is in limbo. There's major questions that have to be answered in the offseason with who the DC is, who leaves, who stays. What does Dan Mullen do himself? Reports that maybe he's discontent. Maybe he's going to step aside, right? Maybe he's going to stay forever. Wherever you want to go on the spectrum, this game is not going to answer any of those questions. And I think for me, I'm someone who always views the program in like totality of where we're going. And this is why this game feels like it doesn't answer anything for me. I don't learn anything in this game. Hopefully Mullen plays Richardson and I learn, okay, great. Thank God Richardson's not going to have to transfer at the end of the year because he's frustrated. That would be awesome. But hype would be like hope, optimism, something new to look at, some reason to think there's a chip in the future that we can evaluate that we don't already know. But I feel like at this point in time, and this might be too big of a statement, Alan, like kind of feel like we know a lot about this team and the coaches and the staff, and we've put it on film. We talk about it every single week. I don't know what I'm going to learn from this one. And it feels impossible that Florida can win this game, not because of personnel, but because of all the things we've covered for 4 years. And that's frustrating. So it takes my hype to a level of like, I'm interested. I want to see what happens, but I don't know how I can be hyped given the scenarios.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm not zagging here intentionally, but hype isn't the right word. Because that means I'm just like sky high. I'm so ready for this game. But I am way high. Oh gosh, what's the word? My emotions are heightened right now. The opposite I feel like is true. This feels like our entire program is resting on Dan's decision this week. Now that might be overwrought and I'm projecting here a little bit, but if he doesn't start Anthony Richardson, Anthony Richardson leaves, that sets this program back years, potentially. If Richardson is who we think he is, right? There's a lot. I'll continue to put all the caveats around it. If he plays him and he plays great, and whether we beat Georgia or not, if it's an electric game, all of a sudden, I think all of the emotions, all the narrative shifts around this program that we move into the offseason with Anthony Richardson. If we move into the offseason switching our defensive coordinator, then the air around the program feels totally different. So it feels like Dan has this choice right now. We're at a crossroads and he's going to make a choice, and I think it's going to sink or swim us for years. So that feels wild to me. So I think it's just, we're like, maybe the rest of Gator Nation's like this too. We're kind of just teetering on the edge here of what is Dan going to do. And we won't know until 3:30 on Saturday. And that's a long time to wait. I think that's why the comments today were so frustrating, because you want that pressure relieved. But no, it's going to be there all week long. And I think if Richardson plays well, I think we'll get to this. I think we can at least have a chance of beating Georgia here. So hyped is the wrong word, but this is a really heightened experience for me.
I like it. If you had asked me, are you apprehensive about the cocktail party? Oh, level 10 apprehension on both sides, because there is a lot at stake. And that's what's interesting, right? I'm not saying this is a game you don't tune into. This is must-see TV at a extremely apprehensive level, because like you mentioned, on one hand, it's the dark timeline, as Chris Musgrover says. It's the darkest of dark timelines, right? Things go off the rails. You lose AR, generational player. Fan base goes berserk. Like, things get real bad. On the other side, at least, you potentially maintain him. And then even if in the dark timeline for Dan Mullen, if he leaves, you have a coach who just like, everybody wants to come to Florida with that guy. Everybody wants to coach him. And if Dan Mullen stays, every DC, hey, we got that guy. We got 15 playing on offense. I will coach the defense. So apprehension, you're absolutely right. We are teetering on the brink of something significant. We don't know what it is. It's going to be very interesting. And I think that's why I, having have, you know, the years I have kind of looking at this and talking about it, I probably feel more negative, because it's been so frustrating to chronicle the journey, that I just feel like I don't want to hope for anything. I just want to be numb if it happens, rather than like, I'm hopeful this has got to happen. It's the logical move, and it doesn't happen, and you're just, you know, level 10 frustration.
Well, it's going to be fascinating one way or the other. I mean, it's at the very least interesting. It's incredibly compelling. And I think it moves this game from like, well, we're just headed into getting trucked by Georgia to, man, I'm really excited to see what happens on Saturday.
For sure. And obviously there's still the silver lining that we can beat Georgia, which we've done before.
We did it last year.
With lesser teams. You know, last year, of course, we'd expect to win, but with lesser teams in the past when Georgia had stuff on the line, which we'll talk about. So a lot to look forward to, a lot to talk about. Right now, of course, we're going to bring you a promo read from BetUS, our title sponsor. BetUS, founded in 1994, is indeed one of the world's oldest online sportbooks, known for its rapid payouts and excellent odds. To sign up, you can go to BetUS.com from your mobile device or your desktop or your laptop or whatever you're using, and use our promo codes. The first one is GNATION125 and get a 125% sign-up bonus. So if you start with $100, you'll get an additional $125 added to your account. You can also use our crypto code, GNATION200. That's GNATION200. If you're using crypto, make sure you're not putting it in one of the many coins that's going absolutely to the moon right now. So choose carefully. As always, if you use either one of those codes, you are supporting the show, as we get basically a hundo bomb for each person that signs up, which is pretty awesome. So visit BetUS.com and sign up today. Thanks to BetUS for supporting our efforts here to bring you this kind of content each week. All right, Alan, let's go through the games that we picked last week.
Yeah, we tied one another here. We both went 6-3, which is not surprising considering most of our picks were in step with one another.
But we did promise. I promised we're going to keep getting better. And so far, so good.
I'm at a robust 55-47.
Solid. Very solid.
You're getting closer there to 500, 49-54.
Not robust for me, but I'm climbing.
So the first game we picked, LSU at Ole Miss. Ole Miss was favored by 10.5. They cover it. 31-17. So I was at this game, right?
Yeah, tell us about it. I wonder, how was the whole experience? Grove and everything.
Right, Ole Miss is more known for their tailgating than their on-field exploits, and I have to say that that was on display. It was awesome. So most of you probably heard about the Grove. I was trying to explain to somebody, imagine the North Lawn at UF. If it was a little more tightly packed, a little more covered in trees, and every inch of the lawn was covered in tents, like right next to each other. And then everybody took those tents and just went all out. The spread of food was amazing at every tent. They're decorated. My friend who I went with, his aunt had a band in her tent.
Like a band.
How many members? Three piece.
No way.
Guitar, drum, keys.
Three people just playing music the entire tailgating setup.
Yep.
Unreal.
And they have like several tents. I mean, some of these like tent complexes really. And because people go in together and they put all of their energy into the tailgate.
Yeah. Right? It's a party really in the football game.
And then, you know, the game itself, their stadium is nice. I mean, the campus is beautiful. It's top notch. Everything is like very centrally located, very quaint little city. Definitely not like the atmosphere of the Swamp or Bryant-Denny or something like that, right? It's a smaller stadium. I mean, they don't ever get loud and cheer, but definitely they've been conditioned not to be super hyped all of the time, right? It's not like the home field advantage other places are. But it was a great experience overall. Ole Miss is a cool place. They retired Eli Manning's jersey. So they had Manning across the end zone. You probably saw that. But it was really cool. And they looked good. They looked like they can beat a lot of teams. And they are not at full strength. They're missing a lot of dudes. They're missing their wide receivers. They couldn't throw the ball deep. But LSU really had nothing for them after the first quarter. Once they kind of like start clamping down on what Ole Miss was doing offensively. And it's not like they have a ton of dudes. They're limited. They have some decent secondary, a couple good linebackers, but they're not like hosses up front. And they play like a 3-2-6 kind of one of those styles. And they were still able to shut down that run game, unlike the Florida defensive staff.
And that's what I want to ask you. So obviously you're there in person. You'd watched LSU just gash Florida. As you mentioned, Ole Miss on offense missing a lot of starters. If you're wondering why they only scored 31, they're missing a lot of starters and they don't have the depth that other schools like Florida might have. So they're not hanging a ton of points on them, but they only give up 17 to an LSU team that shredded Florida, obviously. The counter run was not on display. They were not breaking records. And Ole Miss's defense has been more or less a sieve all year long. It's slowly gotten better, but as you mentioned, they play like Arkansas, oftentimes in 8 DB defense. They play a Big 12 style, bend but don't break, traditionally a defense that Alabama exposed with the power running game. LSU, who just had a very successful power running game day against Florida, couldn't do it.
So LSU looked like LSU previously, right? So that's what made the game even more frustrating, because I mean, you remember Davis Price's stats pre-Florida, rather pedestrian.
Very pedestrian.
Ole Miss holds them to 2.2 yards per carry.
Terrible.
You know, I mean, they just look kind of what they have been. I mean, Max Johnson was cagey, he'll stay in there.
Yeah, he's
take
solid.
A hit. Mm-hmm. He knows where the ball is going. He doesn't have the arm to get it down the field, right? They don't have the receivers to win those battles. You know, so they can move the ball. They're creative enough to like get some stuff done. Because he's cagey, right? But they don't have it, and unless you just run a counter every play.
Right, and that's what's so frustrating is basically that was the score. 17 was what we thought they would put on Florida in a game at home, and they wound up scoring that old miss, which proves just how horrible – we already knew that, of course, but how horrible that performance was.
Yeah, if you thought that LSU was going to turn around, like now they figured it out.
Correct.
And they're just going to run train on everybody. That's not the case.
And this is why ultimately their decision, this is what's important, right? You talk about the direction the program is going in. Their decision to get rid of Ed Orgeron before the Florida win looks obviously very smart, because one game does not make a season, does not save your career. The trend of where your program is going indicates what's happening. And for LSU, that trend is clearly downward. They don't want to be in that direction, so they made the change.
It was funny in the first quarter when LSU was playing better. It's like, man, maybe Edo interim coach is way better. They had to fire him before the Florida game to get him start winning. You know, beats Florida. Maybe he's going to beat Ole Miss on the road. And no, not to be the case.
All right, last question about that one. So Lane Kiffin himself.
Mm-hmm.
Have the Ole Miss fans, are they endeared to him?
They love him. They love him. I think they like the kind of persona that they believe that they should be playing for a playoff spot every few years, right? I don't think that they're crazy, but they believe. And hey, right now they're a top 10 team.
Remarkable.
Yeah. So if Lane stays, right, and that's a little bit of an if, because I was going through the coaching carousel, right? There's nobody that LSU, there's no obvious guy. And you start getting down there, and Lane is kind of the guy who fits what they're looking for. So, I mean, I think Ole Miss, you know, LSU's a better job.
Way better job.
But, you know, the pressure is way higher at LSU. And you know what? If the expanded playoff, if you have a year like Ole Miss is having, you're making the playoff. So is that good enough? And then you could kind of deal it from there, and you don't have to deal with the because, you know, if you win 10 wins at Ole Miss, they're going to build a statue. If you win 10 wins at LSU, they're going to be like, maybe we should fire you.
Yeah, but LSU, to me, is still one of the best coaching jobs in the country.
The field so flattens, though, with that 12-team playoff, though.
It does, but that top-end talent, you need bullets in the gun, and you are always going to be loaded just by default.
That's true.
And Lane Kiffin is an excellent recruiter in the state of Louisiana, where he's going to soak up all the best recruits with that kind of offense that fits the profile of look who's in the NFL from them. Really interesting stuff. We'll see what happens, but his career arc to me is one of the most fascinating of all time. It's an unparalleled arc. And we've said it each week. He really has rebuilt himself, which I love, Alan. I'm not going to stamp out and go on a ledge for his character right now, but I love the fact that I do, and you do too, believe that people can change. And rarely do people make any changes from their past behaviors. At the very least, publicly, Lane Kiffin has significantly changed a lot of the things he used to do publicly.
True.
Again, I'm not going to stump for his, I don't know him, but at least publicly, he's done things a lot of other people have not done when it comes to attempting to make some changes. And it's certainly working out for him because no one ever doubted his X's and O's acumen.
All right, let's keep moving. You know, you went against Alabama here, which you usually do not do. You picked your boys, Tennessee.
I was right for so long. I mean, they were winning. The game was right there in the third quarter.
There was some wonky stuff going on with Tennessee. They had a couple of big plays, right? A couple of coverage busts by Alabama.
But that's because that's what Heupel does.
You're right.
People try to minimize the coverage busts that go on with Tennessee.
Early on, you know, they got that. I mean, it was third and 23. Tennessee is punting. They roughed. I mean, Alabama just blows up the kicker.
That's a free
and then they have a 70-yard touchdown pass. So,
yeah,
you know, but that's the kind of game you got to steal. And then Alabama just puts it on them, and they win 52-24.
Yeah, classic kind of finisher from Bama. But look, if you're a Tennessee fan, there's nothing this game showed you other than you're excited.
Definitely.
Like you're feeling. I mean, for three quarters, you were toe-to-toe with Bama, and you were making big plays against them, which is what Heupel has done against every team he's played. Anyway, I love their stuff on film. They're not there yet, talent-wise. And I'm not saying they're going to ever get there, of course. But clearly a good coaching job in Tennessee this season compared to what we've seen in recent years. And then Bama, as Vegas would do it to me, 27.5 was the line. And they get it by 28. So I lose
it.
One to you. Those jokers.
All right. NC State goes down to Miami 31-30. This is a much-needed win for Manny Diaz. I don't know if it totally cools off his hot seat. But, yeah, this is NC State. You know, they are playing well, and this is why you don't trust them, because they lose to a reeling Miami team.
Well, Alan, it's because the ACC is so competitive and deep that you just can't know who's going to win each week.
That's true.
Brutal. As a kid who grew up right outside Coral Gables and still sees the Hurricane helmet and loves it, tough stuff for Miami. Nice win, but, again, you can't be feeling good about beating. I don't care if NC State was ranked 31-30. I don't care what your season's gone like. We'll see what happens down there in Coral Gables.
All right. Coastal Carolina goes down to App State. This is probably their biggest game left on their schedule. App State's a good team.
Very good team.
And not that it's that big a deal. It's still a great season for Coastal Carolina. But this probably, I mean, I don't know what it would have gotten them, but they're obviously not going to go undefeated anymore. Anytime you can do that, it's special.
Yeah, for sure. And I like that they at least had a game like this. And good for Coastal Carolina, because you know why? We're talking about them frequently. And who talked about Coastal Carolina outside of last year? Outside of the viral video that we need more dogs. Outside of
they needed more dogs.
Nobody knew who they were, but close loss for them. Good for App State.
Here's another one for Vegas just knows, right? Oklahoma State, Iowa State was favored. I got to apologize to Clone Nation.
I can't believe you didn't pick them.
Man, Oklahoma State been playing so well.
But you were right to not pick them because you got inside the spread.
I know. So it was right, but it was wrong. My heart was in the wrong place. Iowa State wins 24-21, a great game.
You could have, if your heart was in the right place, you would have said Iowa State wins, but they don't cover. But you didn't say that, so shame on you. But Look, Vegas is really smart. I have this conversation a lot with people about how they pick the games. I know what they do. Picking against them is very hard, but they're heavy, heavy, heavy on common opponents and common players. So these teams that play each other, like Florida, Georgia, we'll talk about that line, they really utilize the how these individual players play against each other. And that's why you often see some really interesting lines. Vegas does not care at all for the ranking number next to a team or even how much better they've beaten other teams. They care about player versus player. And that's generally the right way to look at it, and that's what happened in this game.
And styles make fights, right? So some teams might match up well, and then another line's like, man, that's just they're going to get brutalized.
Exactly right. Good call.
Just like this next game, Northwestern just gets obliterated by Michigan, 33-7. Michigan was doing nothing. Like, I mean, in terms of like offensively, they threw like seven passes or something. I don't know. They didn't have to do anything. They could just line up and crunch Northwestern. They probably won't be able to do that next week. But yeah, they just steamrolled them.
This is like, I think what Jim Harbaugh thought he was going to be able to do in college football.
Yeah.
Was power football, run, run, run. Don't turn the ball over. And this is going to go down, I think, as one of the more weird years in college football in recent memory. And perhaps for a long time after this, it was such a significant turnover year. You had players staying from COVID. It's a very interesting football season. Michigan has not really played anybody, per se.
No, the back half of their schedule is much harder.
And so we're going to learn about them, and we're going to see if that style can, in fact, get some wins against some good teams. But regardless, what a start to the season for Michigan, a team that certainly Vegas did not think was going to be doing as well as they are thus far, and I did not think so either.
All right, Wake Forest survives against Army 70-56. Both teams individually hit the over in this game, which was like 51.
Incredible.
Which is crazy.
Oh, they were just scoring at will. Good for Wake Forest. Look, I want to keep putting them in. Almost every week we put them in these picks because you have to give a team like this their shine when it's their time. And, you know, what a shootout.
Clemson at Pitt. Man, Clemson. And Pitt's a good team, but they're incredibly mercurial. So who knows what would happen in this game. But Pitt really just takes care of business, 27-17.
Yeah, we said it. We had to take the better quarterback. Pitt has a real quarterback, and I think that was the difference in this football game. If I were doing the Clemson podcast and you were too, Alan, we'd have so much to talk about this season. Dabo seemingly entrenched until the very end with DJ. A lot of questions going on
there. He did
pull
him in this game.
And then I was going to say, finally, you know, yanks him. And we'll see what that's what I'm setting up for. Sets up for the, I think too late to yank him, but he did it finally. So we'll see what happens for the second half of the season. Because now clearly Dabo needs to move into future building mode and he needs to figure out what's happening next season.
And they've got another five-star kid coming in next year.
Exactly.
Really for them, it's been interesting because they've had a rule they don't take any transfers, right?
Which is what I wanted to bring up, which does he begin a new look at what maybe needs to happen here in the future?
Because they've got to fix that offensive line. And that's hard to do via the transfer portal. I think that, I mean, they're obviously fine defensively.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, and they're going to get healthy, you know, at receiver and stuff like that. But, yeah, the offensive line and the quarterback are just holding them back. And I think because they've had transcendent skill position players, they've been able to overcome some of their, like, I think, schematic flatness, right? They don't do anything that, like, necessarily scares you. They're just way better than you. And that's catching up to them this year.
Yeah, it is. And I thought the transfer portal thing is the story to follow. Again, as an investor, it's so foolish to deny yourself a marketplace. And I'm as big of a culture guy as anyone else is. Build your culture, make it happen. But if you look at your culture and think, I have a bunch of great culture guys, but I'm missing, like, two or three pieces I need, you have to go into the transfer market, go into that market and fill those needs. You have to, and you have to trust that when you're working with that kid, that you can trust that he's going to fit enough into the culture as a stopgap to work, because you can't just bury your head in the sand and say, I love this culture so much, I'm never going to take a transfer, because you are missing out on opportunities to improve your team. And again, that's something you have to handle as a coach.
And you know, you don't have to take like 10 transfers. You could take two.
Sure.
And do your due diligence. And those guys don't come in, they don't work out, they don't work out.
Yeah, no doubt. Got to do it.
Okay, last game. Oregon. Man, they had another wild one. It's almost a Stanford game all over again where they're up, they give it away, but not quite. And they win 34-31. So a good win for them. They remain, you know, in control but there's some games left in the Pac-12 for them. Oregon State is tough. Yeah, I don't know. They're such an enigma to me. I feel like they should be so much better than they are.
Yeah, they're underwhelming right now.
Yeah.
Right? And Chip Kelly's team has been feisty out there for sure. The Pac-12 teams have been very competitive with each other outside of Arizona for the most part. But Oregon has done nothing outside of beat an Ohio State team that clearly has gotten dramatically
better
as time has gone on at the right time.
But they've done nothing. They still have that chip, though, man.
It's important, and that's going to carry them if they can keep winning. But to me, they're a fraudulent team. They're a pretender in the contender-pretender game. They're a nice team that can win football games, but they have no top end.
Very similar to Oklahoma, who we'll talk about in a minute.
We will talk about them, which I think Oklahoma still has a higher ceiling top end they could potentially reach. Whether they get there, I don't know. It doesn't seem like Oregon has that gear anywhere.
No.
To where you could win two or three difficult games in a row, which is what it requires to win a national title.
Maybe
they can win one.
They don't have enough difference makers on offense. Their quarterback is way up and down.
Correct. They just don't have enough. But they're squeaking out wins. And look, you want to have good seasons. You have to win, especially if your team's not like, you know, Alabama. You have to win enough games like these to put together special seasons. And so far, they're still doing it. All right. Daytona Steve, back in action. He won his lock. We'll start with that. He correctly had Ole Miss over LSU. He's now 2-4 in the season on locks. Both parlays he went down with. He had Coastal Carolina, which I thought was a very bold choice at App State by him. And then Utah, Oregon State, where Oregon State smacked Utah. So that one just did not.
Sleeping on the Beavs.
Did not work out. Either way, Daytona Steve's back again this week. He did get a lock. He's got a win behind him, and we'll see what his parlays look like. He is 0-6 on parlays, but if he did a whole season of parlays, Alan, given the odds Steve's putting down here, you're really looking just to hit maybe two of them, and you're going to have a very profitable year. So you wouldn't expect that parlay number to be high. We'll see if he can climb his lock number back up after the hard reset. As far as SEC roundup goes, nothing to see here. Arkansas beats AR Pine Bluff 45-3. Mississippi State handles a terrible Vandy team 45-6.
The one note from here, if you have a chance to go back and watch Mike Leach's on-field post-game comments, they ask him about Halloween candy, and he talks about Halloween candy for like 4 or 5 minutes.
Well, it's one of his favorite topics. It's brilliant they asked him that because he loves talking about
that. He talked about gummy bears. He talked about all kinds of stuff. It's fun stuff if you want to Google it.
I love it. I love Mike Leach. What a guy. Comfortable in his own skin. All right, South Carolina at A&M. A&M wins this one 44-14. Again, no surprise here. A&M's defense is rolling. South Carolina's not very good. A&M playing very well now towards the end of the season. They're getting better and better each week.
Yeah, and they've got a lot in front of them, weirdly.
They do. They do. They can make some noise. All right, notes from some games. Penn State, Allen. Penn State. Again, we said these Big Ten teams, we said you can't trust them. We said you can't trust them. They're proving us right every single week. But they lose at home to a bad Illinois team. They lose in a comical 9 overtimes because if you haven't tuned in yet, overtime is no longer what it was. It's a 2-point conversion battle. After the second overtime, and they go back and forth.
And nobody could convert.
They missed together. They scored together.
For a long time, they were not converting either team.
No, they weren't. So, Alan, the Penn State media said this is one of the worst Penn State losses ever. That's how heavy this is hitting the Penn State fan base.
They had dreams about competing for the playoff because they had that Auburn win. They had that Iowa win, you know, and I thought they were a little bit fraudulent in terms of top end. They're a very solid team.
Sure, but, solid team.
You know, Clifford's still a little bit hurt. Their quarterback... Let me ask you this. What do you think about the rule changes for the overtime?
So I would personally prefer more of a flag football style choice-based.
Oh.
Yeah. So in flag football, you get to go 1, 2, or 3, but the one is a play. I think that adds a lot more intrigue.
Oh, that's interesting.
In general. I don't mind the 2-point conversion battle because I think it's dramatic, but I also think it's football. It is football. It's a play. And it takes away... Yes, you're driving from the 25 and other stuff, but I like it because it takes away kicking.
Yeah, same.
I like that a lot. And I'm all for a world where kicking goes away in football. Like, I'm an extremist. I don't want to see kickers ever anymore. Sorry, Caleb Sturgis, you're my guy. But I don't want to see them anymore. I would love to see football played where it's only football plays all the time. It's decided on the field by the quarterbacks, the running backs, the receivers, etc. This does do that. It does that. It eliminates the poor kid who misses a field goal in overtime from 38 yards or whatever, and it puts it in the hands of the players, which I think is a nice clean ending. I think you could go one step better by adding in a little choice. So you go for 2, maybe I decide to go for 3. or who knows, but there's some level of like of point based tries, which adds a little more strategy, which of course we all know about strategy.
But I like
as this stands, just 2 points, I like it though. It's very, very intense and it's football.
So this is what's interesting as you watch them. Actually, that 2 point conversions are hard, right? If you have to do it over and over again because you're limited, you can't stretch the field vertically. So a lot of your offense, if you're looking to run certain routes, just aren't available to you. And if you can't power run, you know, they got caught there. They couldn't either could do anything. So maybe if you start it from the 10, maybe, I don't know, and no kicking, like that might be an interesting thing. I like your idea a lot. I don't hate the 2 point conversion thing. I do think it's not going to repeat itself. It's not going to go to 9 overtimes again.
No, that's unusual. And it's hard for that to happen.
Also, start. They should be like, you got to pick it at the beginning whether you're going to go first or second and which side of the field you're on. No, like walking back and forth across
that's
the field.
That's horrible. Yeah, that.
Yeah, that was just bad.
No, that's really bad. That's foolish. They'll iron it out. This is new.
Yeah.
I think they'll iron it out. But I do think that works. And again, that's very similar to how I think they largely got this from the flag football world, to be real. This is something that they've handled in overtime for a long time. It's been conversion battles at a certain point. It does work really well. And again, it's football. You don't feel like you're losing to a team who didn't beat you playing football. It could be improved. Either way, I like it better than the old overtime. And it's much better, in my opinion, still than the NFL overtime, which befuddles me to no end that a team can win without the other team getting the ball. That's a different story for a different day, but that bothers me endlessly. All right, Cincy, a team I love, Luke Fickell, a guy I love, struggled mightily with, at the time, 1-5 Navy. Now, triple option teams do this to people. Anything to see here? Any reason concern?
No, and we're expecting perfection out of Cincy. You want them to crush every opponent. But there's still the clunkers where you just aren't up for the game because it's the low point in your schedule. I don't hate them for it. I mean, they won the game ultimately. It wasn't that difficult, but they were down for a while.
They were down for a while. I thought Luke Fickell's comments afterwards, again, I like to read coaching comments. They were solid. Obviously, he was frustrated with the start, frustrated with what happened. But at the end of the day, he talked a lot about, like, you're going to have games like this. And the second half, he thought the team dialed in more and had to get a win against an opponent that is very frustrating to play against. Navy's a frustrating team.
Totally. I don't hate them for this at all.
Yep. All right. Wisconsin, Allen. Wisconsin turns around and crushes a newly ranked Purdue, who had just crushed Iowa at home. Make anything of this?
Maybe that Wisconsin's starting to piece it together a little bit back from the dead. We'll see this week. I don't know. This is what I would expect from Purdue, that they're not on the level to be consistently good. So
that's the right takeaway. Not a lot of consistency in football this season. Wisconsin's defense, though, has been very, very consistent. Oklahoma struggles mightily with Kansas, the doormat. They were getting crushed in this game.
They should have lost this game, probably. Kansas just couldn't really close it. Did you see the play with Caleb Williams stealing the ball from the running back?
That was one of the craziest things I've seen.
I've never seen that before.
I couldn't think of it ever happening, and I couldn't think of how the running back let him take the ball. The whole thing is mystifying.
Did he let him? Did they say
I don't know.
Afterwards?
How do you steal it? That
so
doesn't seem possible.
If you're unsure, if you didn't watch it, it's 4th and 1. Oklahoma's going for it. I think they're tied at this point with Kansas. I'm not sure. Kansas has them stopped. And Caleb Williams, the quarterback, the freshman quarterback, approaches the running back, takes the ball from him, and then runs for a few more yards, getting the first down. It was like he stole it from him. I don't know if the guy, Kennedy Brooks, knew that he was giving it to him. It was crazy. At first, I was like, that can't be legal, can it? And I guess it was. I've never seen that before.
Wild stuff. And Caleb obviously struggled in this game, but Lincoln Riley stuck with him, played a much better second half, winds up getting the win. But Oklahoma continues to be perplexing, Allen, to say the
least. Someone said this Oklahoma is like 2013 Florida State, where they keep winning against overmatched opponents, but ultimately that's going to get exposed. They just don't have it this year, I don't think. And maybe they go undefeated and make the playoff, but man, it's going to be by the skin of their teeth, and I don't know if that's good enough.
Yeah, and the hope they have, obviously, is that you have a guy like Caleb Williams keep taking steps forward. For what it's worth, and I'm not doing a film breakdown on Caleb, at the time I watched, you know, every snap of the first half of that game, and for as good as he can look at times, you know, I'll put it out there right now, Anthony Richardson on film is far ahead of Caleb Williams as a pocket passing, reading the field quarterback. And I can confidently say that, having seen both of them for about the same snaps. Doesn't mean that's where it's going to end up. But it's interesting, again, to look at the coaching differences, is that Caleb is not a finished product and Lincoln Riley's rolling him out there and sticking with him.
Because he can sling it.
Because he can sling it. And there's highs and lows, and he's not going to throw him under the bus if he makes some bad decisions. He made some really, really bad decisions. Late throws, mind-numbingly bad stuff. But the upside is there. And if you can get it to lock in, Lincoln Riley knows, hey, if I can make it to a playoff with a guy who gets hot like that, I can do something. All right. Coaching corner, a couple of quick ones here. Monday Night Football, last week, the Bills went for it on 4th-and-1 on the 3-yard line. The Bills, one of the best teams in the NFL. They could have kicked a field goal to tie and go to overtime. There was like 20 seconds left, 4th-and-1. Josh Allen kind of trips a little bit on the quarterback sneak, gets stopped. Do you like the call trying to win the football game? They still were going to have to convert another play or two with 21 seconds left to score a touchdown, or would you have preferred going to overtime?
No, I liked it because not everyone 4th-and-1 is created equal. Sometimes 4th-and-1 means almost 4th-and-2. This was like 4th-and-inches, and you have your dynamite quarterback. I mean, he just slips.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it because I would like – you're right there, and you'd rather punch it in, I think.
I would do it 100 times out of 100 because Josh Allen is virtually unstoppable on the quarterback sneak, even when you know it's coming. And that's why they did it. I think depending on your team, you might not do it. But he's maybe the best outside of him and Tom Brady, are the best quarterback sneak quarterbacks in the league. And he slipped a little bit. Unfortunate.
Yeah, weird stuff happens when you're playing that tight.
That's it. All right, Colorado State. This one is wild. If you didn't see this one,
which you probably did,
Steve Adazio, former much maligned offensive coordinator for Florida, but a good O-line coach, then coach of Boston College, now coach of Colorado State. They complete a 30-yard pass to get down into field goal range at the end of a game where they're kicking a field goal to win. And rather than spike the ball, there's like 21 seconds, 19, 18, 17 ticking down. Rather than just spike the ball at 4 and kick a field goal, or spike the ball at 20 and run another play or two and spike it again, they choose to rush the field goal unit out there. But it wasn't a cohesive, coordinated effort. Kind of like some guys are on, some guys are off. Like people are running in and out. And they basically just get the field goal off as time expires and they miss. But the most interesting part to me, Alan, was that Steve Adazio looked maybe the most confused. Like he was looking around, like what is happening? Like who said what to who? Like, which led me to believe, like, how did those decisions even happen on the sideline? They all have headsets. Like, how is it the head coach is looking around befuddled as to how one thing is happening over another? And, like, I mean, are people going rogue? I mean, it was
so here's
a train wreck.
I've read a little bit about this. So when they had the guys ready, just in case, right? You want them to be, like, keyed up, ready to go in if you have to run them on last second. But they got a first down. But the guys just ran out there anyway.
On their own, the players went out.
Because they don't have a special teams coordinator.
Oh, my goodness.
They've like divvied it up to like quality control coaches and other stuff.
No way. So there was no one to say, now's the time. So
no
the
one
players
to say,
just
don't
looked around
go.
And
they
thought,
just were like,
I need to go.
Yeah.
It's time to go. Oh, my. That's unreal. That's unimaginable. But it's kind of like we said. People don't have special teams coaches in this case. They also don't have a strategic coach that we keep imploring people to have. Hey, call timeout. Don't call timeout. Do this. Just employ that guy.
Well, I mean, that was a hire that's like, man, what? Zero imagination and just
none.
Terrible.
No okay. Upside. No upside. All right, Alan, read some Patriots from Patriots. Some patrons from our list.
They might
here.
Be Patriots as well.
They
Who
could
knows?
Be Patriots and patrons. What I want to say first is I got quite a bit of mail from all of you. I love all of you that were like, hey, you did not read me out on the patron list. And you're right, we didn't, because we're not reading all of them at once. So if you don't hear your name on this one, rest assured you will. We are reading them in order of history. So right now we're in September of 2017, way back in the day of when these people had contributed. And we'll get to you, I promise. We love all of you. It's why we do this every single year. I don't know how many people, you know, read off all of their patrons. We do. And guess what? This is great. There's 300 of you. 300 of you are awesomely supporting us with donos financially, and we love it and support it. And so we'll get to you, I promise. We love you. We want to honor you. And Alan will do that right now with the next set of 50.
Okay, Gary from Atlanta. Gary, glad you're from Atlanta. Wilson Whitaker, Kara Pridgen, Michael Reeves, John Porter, Pei Chen, Dr. Kyle Ikatani. He didn't put that there. I did. Well-respected doctor around town. Corey Spradlin, Matthew Mitchell, Neil Callanan, Brian, Alexander Smith, Joseph Picoro, sorry, I totally butchered that, I think, Anthony Lepore, Kathleen G. Smith, Scott Greenberg, Daniel Rychek, Zach F., Amar Vady, Barry Averett, Wayne Patterson, What up, Wayne? I'm sure you're enjoying this Braves run here. Steven Tosca's Lakeside Gator, and the immortal Guillermo Diaz.
Guillermo Diaz of Chacon Diaz and D. Virgilio, my boy, my guy, supporter. Appreciate that, Guillermo.
All right, why don't you take the rest there?
All right, Jamie Wagner, Daniel Welch, Bill Hood, who I frequently correspond with on the social media waves, Ann McQuinn, let's go Ann, Richie Legler, Mark, this one gets me every time.
Chmielarski.
Chmielarski we'll go with, could be another pronunciation depending on how you choose to pronounce the CH and the M, but Mark, if we got it wrong, let us know. Andrew Mosley, known him for many moons. Thanks, Andrew. Christopher Millward, Robert Astby, or Astby, Shaka Shakes. Let's go.
That's great.
That's glorious.
Chris, I don't know who that is. That's awesome.
Shaka Shakes. Chris Hall, Matthew Roberts, Russell and Vicky Hall, TJ Nowick, Ocho Gringo, Robert Davies, Kyle Moore. What's up, Kyle? Rob Lunsford, Richie Caudill, Alexander Leventhal. That's when he joined right there in September. James Maynor, Tim, Evan Fitzgerald, Joshua Javahari, also known as Java, another one of my guys here in Gainesville. Hans Lopez, back in the college days, we played Halo 1 against each other. Gainesville Place Apartments, let's go Hans. And then Larry Mavinsky. Thanks to all of you for supporting us. It means the world to Alan and I. And thanks to all of you for listening, of course. If you're not a patron, we love you just as much. Thanks to listening, supporting, sharing the show with your friends. It's why we do it. And now, Alan, it's time to talk about the big show, UGA.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The Georgia Bulldogs, it's happening. Here we go. I love this game. This is a part of, I feel like, my history, my story. I'm from Jacksonville.
You are from Jax. That's important.
Yeah, so I probably mention this every year. Been to a million of these games. I love it. I never want us to move this game out of Jacksonville. I love the uniqueness of it. I love that 3:30 start. I mean, very few times it hasn't been at 3:30. CBS wisely keeps it there. Amazing. Usually Halloween weekend. Fantastic, man. Florida, unranked Florida, 4-3, versus number one UGA. Not often you get to play number one team. Here it is again.
Twice in one season for us.
Yep. Favored by 14.5.
Surprising, perhaps, to you?
Yes and no. I like that number. Some respect for Florida. Not that we deserve it, but there you go. Kirby Smart in his sixth year. Wow, 6 years for old Kirby.
Time goes by really, really quickly.
Talent edge, unsurprisingly, to Georgia. They're second in that composite, 19 five-star. And it's wild. Someone was doing the breakdown of this. I mean, I think over a certain period, Florida signed like 4 or 5 stars, and Georgia signed 9 in 1 year. it's like our top 50 players, basically, if you're going to use that metric, they're on a whole other level. Because even that gap between second and seventh, it's only five spots. But if you're like putting on a graph, they're like way, way, way out along with Alabama. So pretty big gap there. Georgia returns a decent amount of starters, 13 total, 8 on offense, 5 on defense. The coaching staff, you know, they turned it over a couple years ago. Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator, now in his second season, been the OC at several places, including NFL and Tampa Bay and Cleveland. Dan Lanning, his third year, he's been at UGA since 2018. So some veteran guys, right? Todd Monken, I think that was a good hire for them. A little bit neutered last year because of their quarterback situation. But liking what I'm seeing from them, right? They're not all defense, no offense, even if their defense is their calling card. So B-Ray wants to know, is this the best UGA team ever? Question mark.
Well, let's do some analysis, and then I'll answer this for B-Red, as will you. It feels like that, I think, to the outside public, if you're just looking at how they're rolling. But as always, you got to put the film on and see if that's backed up by what you see on the All-22.
Right, and neither of us watched those Herschel Walker 1980 teams, right?
Yeah, certainly we're not an authority on this because yeah. Most of Georgia's best teams, as you just mentioned, occurred before you and I were alive and were paying attention to football.
So maybe since post-Herschel Walker, we'd be fine there. Okay, the guys on Georgia's offense, you know a lot of these guys. Stetson Bennett, our old friend, as a good Georgia quarterback should be. His name works backwards and forwards. Playing well. You know, 69% completion rate, 11 TDs, 2 interceptions. He's doing what they're asking him to do when he's out there. He's a guy who knows what's happening on the offense, and he's not going to screw it up too much. Now, he looked terrible against Florida last year. We'll see if that repeats. JT Daniels, if he's in the game, he's also playing well, 76% completion rate, 5 TDs, only 2 picks. Been hurt for a while. No clue who's going to try it out there. Maybe both. We'll see. Number 3, Zamir White. Gets a lot of the carries. He's got 400 yards, 7 TDs. You also see James Cook, Kendall Milton. Brock Bowers, their tight end, leads the team in targets. They like him. They throw to him a lot. And they've just got a bunch of other guys at receivers. The very Georgia Ladd McConkey, number 84. you'll see him out there. Jermaine Merton, Pickens, their guy who's supposed to be their guy this year, is still out. So they have some talent. They're not the most talented guys at receiver, but still enough to get the job done. They're talented along the offensive line, very talented along the offensive line. And at the running back position, they definitely have some dudes. Not the Nick Chubb level guys, but they've got guys who can get the job done for sure.
Yeah, that is the storyline of this team, Alan, is when you put them in on film and you look at the actual talent, what's making the offense run? It's the offensive line.
Totally.
That's what's making this run because they are rolling out. I mean, some of their best players, Pickens out, their best receiver, most talented guy. Jermaine Burton, their second most talented guy, has missed half the games, groin injuries, other stuff. So you got Ladd McConkey, who's a three-star, like player 1,100. Who just sort of shows up and expects to be...
Don't underrate Ladd McConkey, all
right? A role player guy, right? But having a nice season. And then obviously you have Brock Bowers, who's a four-star highly recruited tight end, who's featuring, which makes sense. They're featuring him because he is their best like offensive player. But that's unusual if you're going to say the best team ever and you can't really pick a high-level running back or receiver or feature guy. Interesting. But football is not a game about having the 11 best individuals. It's a game of having the 11 best players that work together. And that's what this Georgia team, I think, does the most. Heavy run team, Allen, 62% run, 38% pass.
And part of that is also because they are just up by so much in most of these games.
And they're playing to their strengths. So yes. This, what I want to talk about as the main narrative is this an Alabama floor team with Jalen Hurts? We talked a lot about that. I hated that. And the answer is no, it is not. And I'm going to unpack this for you. Although they don't throw it a lot, this is not that Alabama floor style team at all. So they're top 5 in points per play, which tells you that they're explosive. They're top 10 in yards per pass, which tells you that they're explosive. Play action, as it's always seemingly been for Georgia, is a staple. They convert a lot of significant plays on play action. They are excellent at that. Here's what's interesting on film with them. If you ask me, the difference between Stetson Bennett and JT Daniels is clear in that JT Daniels is a better quarterback. I think Georgia knows that. The interesting question here is JT Daniels had a legit lat injury where he couldn't even throw for a couple of weeks, not well at least. He's now healthy. Now he has to prove he's ready to handle this level of game, which I personally think he is. But as we teased earlier, if you're Georgia, Stetson Bennett on film this year is much better than he was last year. He's making more throws. He's more confident. But primarily, it's because the offensive line is a wall. It's a wall. And they are executing very simple throws for Stetson Bennett. He can read the field, but he's not a guy who's got a highlight arm. He doesn't necessarily throw the ball always on time. So they love to roll him to the right. They love it. They roll him to the right all the time. They love to run like deep comeback routes, like very safe routes. No underneath dropper anywhere. With all that being said, though, Alan, he's made some really nice throws. So I'm not going to discredit Stetson Bennett. He's made some nice throws over linebackers, under safeties. But predominantly, it's a lot of one option, maybe two options at most, safe throws, not in traffic. And he is executing that very well because the run game is solid, because the defense puts a ton of pressure on the other team. And when they hit big, big chunk yards. Big, big chunk yards on offense. When JT Daniels is in, the offense, I think, is just a higher level. He makes more throws.
They can do more stuff.
He can do far more stuff. The routes they run are different. They attack all parts of the field much quicker. The ball comes out faster. It's just a better-looking offense. What they choose to do will be up to them, but I can see why in this situation, for this one particular game that you're looking at and you're thinking, well, if JT Daniels comes in and perhaps he's a little rusty, a little nervous early on, maybe he does something because he's a better quarterback. He tries to throw a ball that he could typically throw and he's a little off. It's a pick. Stetson's probably not going to do that at this stage. So remains to be seen. We'll see what happens there. But on offense, I think the main key is Georgia is good at everything. They're not spectacular at anything outside of their offensive line just being very, very, very solid. They allow hardly any sacks. Yeah, they throw a lot of picks early on, not recently. They've thrown hardly any interceptions in the past three or four games. They've really got it going. And on top of that, they use, obviously, their tight end heavily, which makes sense. They block a lot with him, much like Florida uses their tight ends, and they release him out into the flat or across the field, across the formation. He's typically wide open. He has a good matchup. It's tough for teams to match up with them because of the personnel they use. But Georgia, in a nutshell, Alan, is going to look like, really, it's going to look a lot like the Matthew Stafford era of Georgia. A lot of play action, a lot of deep shots, a lot of power running. And for Gator fans, sadly, they're a very solid counter run team. They run the counter tray. They run the guard tackle counter, and they're very good at it. They've scored multiple touchdowns on it this season. I featured that in the YouTube film review. So on film, there's a lot of things their offense does that's given Florida problems. But, you can contain this Georgia offense if you slow down their running game, because any heavy play action team like this one, any team where you pop on the film and you see the majority of their throws being 10 yards plus and they're gouging you, it's because they're running the ball well. If you can do anything to slow them down running the football, get them into 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, that's not where they excel. So they are not an offense that you're necessarily afraid of. They're an offense that if they start to go downhill against you, you're in trouble. Everything's available to them.
Yeah.
You're not in a good place. So you have to stop the run. Otherwise, you are in serious trouble, because with their defense and then that offense, they'll ball control you, they'll grind you, they'll finish you.
So they haven't really been challenged since that Clemson game. No one's just had the horses to do anything against them. I'm interested to see what happens if you make them play left-handed. Right, if they can't do the stuff that they normally want to do, can Bennett make enough plays for them to be successful? I don't know if Florida would be able to make them play left-handed, but and again, this is easier said than done. No one's pressured their quarterbacks either.
No, I mean that's the secret. Is the offensive right. line has been sensational.
But the good news for Florida is that they feature the tight end and Georgia has a long, long history of tight ends dropping the ball in the Florida-Georgia game.
Amen to that.
So there you go. Okay, let's talk about this UGA defense. Anything else you want to say about offense first, though?
No, we'll talk more in context of the keys to the game.
B-Red's first note on their key players. Really, everyone is a key player. Man, number 99, Jordan Davis, their defensive tackle. And I'm blanking on his kind of other defensive tackle, his running mate. Devonta Davis, maybe.
Number, 95. Yep.
Both of them are stellar.
Absolutely stellar.
Will eat your lunch. I mean, his quickness in the hole is unbelievable. If you just watch him film him, I mean, people are touting him, I think rightfully so, as a Heisman Trophy style candidate. He's really great. Jalen Carter, excellent rushing the passer.
Largely because their D tackles are just, they're so explosive off the ball.
Their linebackers, especially N'Kobe Dean, I think, and Nolan Smith, very rangy, very fast.
Super sound.
Keely Ringo, which is a great name.
It's an incredible name, and he has been unreal.
Yes.
He's unreal number five this season. I mean, you talk about a shutdown corner. He has been absolutely shut down.
And there's not a guy out there that it's usually obvious, like, okay, here's their weak spot, right? They play cohesively and collectively so well that even if there's some bad matchups out there in the field, they usually just don't allow you to get to that, or they rally to the ball so well. You don't see big plays broken against them. You don't see a lot of missed tackles. You don't see them out of alignment. They're functionally extremely sound, and they're extremely talented.
Absolutely. And really, it's their front seven that makes this team go. So if you want to win football games, you have to be good up front. We talk about this a lot. That's true of this Georgia team. On defense, they're sensational with their front seven. On the back end, you can find a lot of instances on film, Alan, where receivers are open. You can find them. It's not complicated. Their secondary, I think, is fine. I think Ringo's excellent. I think outside of that, although there's talented
guys.
But
they're fine. There's not a guy that you look at and go, that guy can't play.
They're fine. But part of it is, and this is what's interesting on film, and this is one really important thing, is you can roll the film on teams and you can watch receivers be open. But one of the reasons they're open sometimes is Georgia plays tendencies because they know their pass rush is getting there. They take risks, is what I'm saying, in the secondary, because that D-line is almost always forcing the quarterback off the spot. The quarterback's throwing the ball from an adverse position, and the receiver might be open, but they're taking the ball that's most likely to be thrown. But receivers can get open. Auburn had success. Bo Nix had success. If you can get time, and that's really easier said than done, I think Georgia's secondary can be beat. Now, the front seven, almost unbeatable. Literally almost unbeatable. They play with perfect technique. They play zone well. They play man well. They rush the passer well. And, of course, there's been a lot of talk about them using simulated pressures this year. It's not new. Coaches have used simulated pressures forever. It's very NFL-like to use simulated pressures because it's much more complicated for your team to be able to make sure they zone correctly off of this. And what is a simulated pressure? Well, if you watched our film breakdowns last year, you saw this. Teams frequently use it as simulated pressure to mess up DeLance all year long, where they basically would drop somebody back and bring a linebacker to blitz, right? So definitionally, Alan, it means, let's say on a certain play, I'm going to bring four people to rush the passer, but you have no idea which four I'm going to bring. I might drop my two defensive ends into coverage, and I might bring my two linebackers. I'm still bringing only four. Your five linemen still have a 5-4 advantage. But it feels like pressure because the linemen are slowed down a little bit. Even in a Florida zone blocking scheme where you should, hey, I'm blocking the zone, it's okay, whoever comes to me, I take them. It slows down these college linemen enough that it tends to collapse the pocket when it shouldn't. So if Georgia just lined up in their front four and rushed their front four, teams' offensive lines would be more successful at stopping them. Instead, they're going to send four, they're going to play zone behind it, and it's confusing. Quarterbacks move off their spot, offensive linemen get beat. So simulated pressure, a lot of zone defense. They do play man 21% of the time. When they play man, they prefer to play cover two man, which I love. I love cover two man. I think it's one of the most sound ways to play man defense. And the reason they can do this, and this is what makes them go, Alan, we've talked about how Grantham will stay in his two high shell until the world ends. Well, Georgia stays in their two high shell almost all the time. But they can do it because their front seven or front six is so good that they can play -1 or sometimes -2 up front and stay sound on the back end. Now, in football, there's a very simple recipe. If a team is able to play too high against you and you can't run the ball, you are dead. You are going to lose. It's absolutely game over for you because they're playing sound on the back. They're daring you to run and you can't do it. So far, not a single team all season long has been able to pull Georgia out of their too high defense. Not a single one. If Florida is capable of that, you can have chances to craft big plays against them. Most teams have had to drive in the face of that cover two defense, and they're not going to run cover two. When I'm saying cover two, I'm just saying too high. They can run cover four, they can run cover three, but there are always guys behind the ball. You're not going to get behind them very easily. They're going to keep stuff in front of you, and they're going to rush the passer phenomenally well, moving you off the spot, putting you in the wrong place. Just really, really, really solid stuff. So with all that being said, here's perhaps the most important thing. Florida is a really poor tackling team in general. Georgia is a phenomenal tackling team. When you compare individual players and you look at missed tackle rate, Florida has six of the top seven on that list, with the only Georgia player being the sixth player who's a defensive tackle who's missed four tackles. Because defensive tackles sometimes do that because they're in a hole getting double teamed, right? Where Florida's got linebackers missing tackles, etc. Georgia, their secondary and their linebackers basically just don't miss tackles. So you're not going to get easy extra conversion yards. You're going to have to earn it against them. On defense, they're as sound as a college defense could be. Because playing that much zone, as we've talked about, and I'll end with this, Alan, is really very, very hard. It's really hard to teach college kids how to play zone at that level, especially when you're constantly changing who's coming, who's dropping, how they handle it. They handle certain offensive formations in ways that no one else in college football does. They'll often have their corner, which is very smart. They'll have their corners take either the nub tight end, so the empty tight end like Florida likes to run. They'll have the corner take him instead of oftentimes a linebacker. But the linebacker flow underneath to a running back or even the number two receiver coming out. They do a lot of very, very smart tendency plays that other teams do not do that by design just takes away what teams want to do. So they're having tremendous success in large part because they play as a unit, as you mentioned, and their front seven is incredible. And they run a really solid zone scheme that, again, most college quarterbacks are just not going to be equipped to handle it. And in a year like this year, when offenses are way down in college football, when veteran quarterbacks are almost nowhere to be found, this is perhaps the perfect recipe to have as a football team. They have the perfect defense for the season we're in. In other years, like Kyle Trask could put pressure on this team if he had any kind of blocking. He could really put pressure. Mac Jones last year, tremendous pressure on this Georgia team. There are no teams like that this year. So we'll see if Florida can put pressure on them with a guy like Richardson who has the tools to do it. We'll see if Florida can do something that no team has been able to do thus far, which has really put them in a bind consistently. Most teams get one good drive against them, and that's about all you get.
They're scary. Yes, I do think they can be had if you had an elite-level offense, right? Every defense has holes, right? If you could block them and you could, as you said, in the secondary is not, I said they're solid everywhere, but they don't have the stars that they've had in the past all over the secondary, right? But that front seven, I don't know that you can do anything in the run game.
You can't.
Unless really. You're extremely creative or you're doing something that causes them to second guess what they're doing. And Florida, you know, Dan Mullen likes to roll some stuff out there that puts Georgia in a bind. Those wheel routes last year, some of the stuff that Trask was running that was just busting him up down the sideline. And of course we had Kyle Pitts and Trevon Grimes in that game. We don't have them anymore.
And Georgia did not have a front seven that they have this year.
No, Jordan Davis didn't play in the game last year. It's tough. So, all right, if you're designing an attack for Florida, what are you going
to
do?
You have to hold up at the line of scrimmage. That's step one. You have to. Because if you know that you can get receivers open, and Florida's receivers have been getting open, then you have to hold up. So you need to be thinking, hey, I need to keep a running back in just for that extra time, especially if it's Richardson. He's got a big arm. And I have to run routes over the middle of the field. Since they want to favor a too high shell that's either cover four or oftentimes sometimes cover two, where their linebackers drop and get depth, the place to throw is between 12 and 18 yards. That's the place to throw against Georgia. Those are hard throws for college kids to make. They often don't want to make them. I think Richardson can make those throws.
He's shown that he can make them.
Kyle Trask was exceptional at making those throws, which is why we were so high on him in a college football offense. That's the throw that will hurt Georgia. Now, Georgia has benefited from not playing any truly good offenses On film, their defense is still very solid, but those throws are available. There are ways you can attack this team. Double moves, especially on the sideline, have worked against Georgia. People have missed them, or they just haven't hit them because of pressure, but they are there. Their corners are susceptible to that because of how much pressure they get. And again, you can move the ball on this Georgia defense, but as the game goes on, and that's what's happened in every game, is Auburn came out really good game plan. Had some drop passes they should have converted. That game, they really should have been moving down the field their first three drives, and then Georgia figured them out, and it was over. It was done. There were no more yards to be had for Auburn. So you need to score early on them before they start to get a beat on kind of where guys are going and what's happening. You have to get a few points on them early. If you don't, you're in trouble. And there's two main players to attack. One, which is an incredible story here, Alan, number 47, Dan Jackson, is a walk-on. He's a walk-on who plays a ton of snaps at strong safety. Super fast guy. Kirby loves him. It's remarkable this guy's playing as much as he plays. He's a nice tackler. He's not good in coverage. Teams have been attacking him when he's on the field. So if you see 47 in the strong safety spot, Florida needs to go at him. Secondarily, one of their corners is a senior, number 9, Amir Speed. He's been missing some games, but if he plays, he's by far their weakest corner. Not only on film, but also stats-wise. So those are two guys where if you see them on the field, 47, number 9, Florida should attempt to attack them. Those are matchups they like. But outside of that, it's hard to envision in this game, Alan, that Florida can look at the film and think that they're going to be able to line up and run zone read against this Georgia defense. That does not seem like it's going to work. And their negative play rate is so high that if you run the zone read and they happen to break through one-on-one, which they do frequently, now it's 2nd and 14. And those are drive killers. So Florida's going to be very careful with how they handle their run game. Although it has been good, they have not faced anything like this.
Yeah, I think Florida should be able to run the ball occasionally or well enough, but not in the ways that we're doing it with Emory Jones, where basically our entire rushing attack is just we're going to bludgeon you and we're going to win because we can. That won't work. That'll never work. I don't think that it's impossible, right? And some of this is going to be health, like how healthy is Garage, how healthy is White, how healthy is Kingsley? We don't know the answer to any of those questions. They were dinged up. Hopefully, they're feeling better. Man, it's hard to think of a scenario, right, where we can just play it straight up. We're going to have to get kind of wonky, and we're going to have to be aggressive down the field. Can we hold up to the pressure? Can we hold up, right, and not make mistakes? Richardson is a wild card. It's why I'm intrigued by it, right? Because he can do enough things to put enough pressure on you everywhere, right? Deep balls down the field, balls over the middle. If you mess up your rush lanes, he's going to pick up 30 yards on you immediately, right? So I don't hate it. It's not like nothing we can do. With Emory, there's almost nothing we can do. That's why it'd be insane to start him in this game. If you watch the Arkansas game, Arkansas didn't get the ball past midfield. Now, we're a better offense than Arkansas is, I think, maybe, right? Probably, but not so much so that you feel like you could just line up and mash them. They're just going to be like, cool, we see what you're doing and we're not going to allow you to do it. Just from a utilitarian point of view, you almost have to play Richardson just to give yourself the chance to win. That remains to be seen.
You have to. You have to do it, Dan Mullen. You have to do it. And
even if it's unsuccessful, even if he throws 5 picks, you're not going to win the other way.
No, but he wouldn't. The thing is, I don't think that he would.
I don't. Yeah, but that's what you're fearing. I guess whatever you create the downside.
Yeah, how'd you fear that?
Of him playing poorly, missing plays, whatever it might be, right? The upside is the only thing that matters in this game. Again, if you play them straight up with Emory Jones, you will lose 99% of the time.
I mean, that's all that matters anyway. I think that's where Dan just has to get it. You play the better guy, and you recognize that quarterback is the hardest position in all of sports, and sometimes even the best quarterbacks have really bad games. Even the most experienced ones have really bad games. But are they capable of having a really good game? And so the tools are there. Florida's offensive line, obviously, if they're healthy, has proven to be a decent pass-blocking unit this season. And decent's being kind, they've been better, but recently they've been struggling. Obviously, this is a game where you look at DeLance and you know it's bad. This is a bad, 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 bad situation for DeLance. They're going to simulate pressure him. He's been horrible his whole career with that. He's bad one-on-one against speed rushers. This is bad. But if you have a healthy left side, if White's healthy, if Garage is healthy, if Kingsley's healthy, you could at least more or less trust that most of the time you're going to have enough time to make a read or two, which other teams have not been able to say. So a lot's going to be on Florida's O-line to at least just hold up. They don't need to be unbelievable in this game, but they have to hold up enough to where Georgia respects the fact that they can throw the ball again to those intermediate windows. You are not, Allen, going to convert flat routes against Georgia for any meaningful yards. It's not going to happen.
They eat that up.
They crush your east-west stuff. They're setting on it. And this season on the wheel routes, fun fact, they've been using their safeties a lot on the wheel route, which they saw. They moved to that last year. Late in the game, they started running their safeties on Florida's wheel routes. That opens up other stuff. So that's what they've been doing. So we'll see how Florida chooses to wrinkle that. You know that Dan Mullen will wrinkle that. But either way, the nutshell Georgia for me is this. This is a very good football team. They're not a juggernaut. That's not to demean them in any way, shape, or form. I think they're the best team in college football this season right now because they're a complete football team in how they play together. They play organized football. They play smart football. They play sound football. They don't give you anything. That's what good football teams do. But they lack that top end that the best teams typically have each year, right? 2019 LSU, 2020 Bama. We can go back and forth between all these. They don't have that to them. And I think the 14.5 point spread is there because Florida does have corners. Elam plays, Marshall plays. Those guys can cover. Georgia does not have receivers. You're going to expect to be getting wide open on Florida. Now you got a major issue, which we've chronicled a million times over, with Chavez Johnson getting playing time. We don't know about Torrance's health, not that I know of at least. That's a huge question mark. If Torrance isn't playing, you're in major trouble. You got guys in Trey Dean, who is one of the highest missed tackle rates. Trevez Johnson is the highest missed tackle rate in the SEC percentage-wise. And we have two guys who are whiffing on tackles all the time against a team that will punish you endlessly if you miss a tackle. So you can find ways where Georgia's offense struggles. The game is slow. Florida stays with that number. And you can find ways where Florida's offense can score 20-21, which is what I think they're looking at. Can Florida score 21-24? And if they can, will Georgia score more than 31 or 34? That's a reasonable score. There's your 14.5. So I think that's what it looks like. The film backs that up. But I think there's a lot of ways that this Georgia team could just break the will of Florida. And you mentioned it. If Emory Jones plays early and they just get after and the Florida fans get booey, right? The team gets frustrated. You're creating a really like bad environment for a much stronger sound Georgia team to play you. It could be a long day.
All right, why don't you take us through the categories?
Special teams is a push. I'm going to give a slight edge to Florida. They have a slightly better punt return unit, Florida does, and they have maybe a slightly better kicking unit. Neither team is great on special teams. Penalties, UGA is penalized less than Florida is. Turnover margin, UGA better turnover margin, especially recently. Their 3-game trend, 4-game trend is really solid on takeaways, giveaways. And time of possession is a push. So Florida's got a great TOP this season, but so do a lot of other teams they've played. Georgia's one of them. It's a push there. Probably edge to Georgia, obviously, because you'd expect their defense to play better than Florida's, and you would expect them to be favored in that category. But as far as stats go, that's the level there.
Injuries, depth chart, a lot of question marks, honestly. We talked about the offensive line. Whittemore was in a boot. Mentioned Torrance. A lot of key guys that Florida really needs are question marks. Now, maybe they were fine and they played the whole game. Dan's not giving out any of that info right now, at least from the presser. Maybe stuff leaks out. As of right now, I'm not aware of anything. So that could change, but Florida needs all of those guys. Those are all very, very key guys. So that you know, creates some mystery over this game too about how it might go. And then, of course, on the other side is the big quarterback question for Georgia. Is it JT Daniels? Is it Stetson Bennett? When we go to the game prediction, you know, I think part of it is it Stetson Bennett or is it JT Daniels? That affects my prediction a little bit, at least in terms of the range. You ready to get to it?
I'm ready.
All right, why don't you give your keys to the game first?
So I'm going to give the keys to the game as we always do, which is if this happens, Florida has the best chance of winning. And I'll start with Florida's offense. There's things you could say that are more simple. You need X amount of rushing yards. You need no turnovers. But I think the one that's going to determine it in large part, like these other things have to happen for this to happen, is something you used earlier this season, which is the explosive play category. if Florida wants to beat Georgia, they have to have explosive plays. The only way they can have explosive plays is to be able to competently run the football, keep them off balance. Otherwise, you're not going to get any. And I think if Florida wants to win a game like this, they have to have a lot of them. And a lot in a game like this is four. I'm going to say four plays they need in this game. And I'm going to say four plays of 20 plus yards. That's a high amount, but that's the only way you're going to score on this Georgia defense. They are not going to let you have 12 plays drives where you just methodically move the ball down the field. It's not going to happen. So you got to chunk yards. So I'm going to go four plays of 20 plus here as my key. And on defense, I cringed to even make anything defensive here, Alan, because the Grantham era has so ruined me. But the obvious and easy answer here is that you cannot let Georgia run the football on you. So you're going to have to limit them if you want a chance to win this football game to under 150 yards rushing. You have to. That will keep them around 350 total yards of offense. That'll keep them around the mid-20s in your point total, and that gives you a chance to win the football game. So I think those two are the most important ones, aside from all the ones we could talk about football cliche-wise, etc. If those two things happen, I think Florida has a chance to potentially win this football game. If they don't happen, I think it's almost impossible. There's too many narratives that lead to a Georgia win.
So I'm going to give one that's going to be a little bit harder to quantify, but it's going to be like negative offensive plays. So tackles for loss or sacks. If they're in the backfield creating net negative plays for Florida and we're getting too many third and longs, or we're just not being able to be aggressive but really reactionary, I think that's going to just be doomed for this offense, right? So if we're able to keep them from crashing into the backfield on every play, I think that bodes well. Defensively, man, there's a lot of ways this could go badly for Florida, and trying to pick out the best kind of version of success. I want to say interceptions, because Georgia has given us the ball in the past. Stetson Bennett will throw an interception if you pressure him, I think. So two interceptions. This is like, I think, what Florida needs to have at least in this game. Fumbles are way too wonky. Predicting fumbles are
impossible, basically. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And you're right, by the way, about the interceptions.
Yes.
JT Daniels, I think, is less so.
Yeah.
But Stetson Bennett, when he gets pressured, his pressure rate, he does not exceed with that.
And if that happens, you know, all of a sudden there's some chaos in the game. Again, I don't think Florida has no outs in this game if Richardson is playing. I keep having to say that over and over again.
Well, you have to say it. Otherwise, we have no outs.
All right. Well, lead us to the predictions.
Prediction time. I will go first. It's my turn to go first.
I think you ask me.
Oh, I get to ask you. Okay. It's your turn to go first. As we've said before, some listeners asked me this. They said, do you and Alan, I know you don't talk about it, but like, do you think you're influenced by what Alan says or vice versa? And I had said no, and I think you do the same thing. I have a score in my head right now.
Totally.
That is not going to change regardless of what you say. And we never talk about it, and yet we're always so close. So this game is really interesting. I'm very curious to see what you are going to say for this one.
All right, so I'm going to say this is a Stetson Bennett prediction.
Okay, Stetson Bennett's playing, you think, most of the game here.
That's fair.
That's fair. And you think Anthony Richardson is playing most of the time for Florida? Because that's the other side, too.
Yes, and I'm going to say Richardson plays.
Okay, that's fair. Got it. Like it.
Again, those two variables.
Important variables, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say 28-17, Georgia.
Okay. All right. So Florida stays within the 14.5 there.
They do. I almost went a little higher for Georgia, but that's a Bennett pick. JT Daniels ups then that you think to 32-35 maybe.
Yep, I like that. All right, I'm going to say that Georgia puts 38 out there, and I think Florida puts 20 out there. So 38-20. So I think Georgia covers that spread. If Emory Jones plays the entire game, I think the score is probably 38-3.
Legitimately. Agreed.
So I think there's a 17-point difference in Richardson, and if Richardson plays the entire game, I'd be tempted to go as high as 27 for that score, which would be a phenomenal day against Georgia. I think it could be done. But I don't think he's going to play the entire game. I think there's going to be at least some series that Emory Jones plays, and you don't get a lot of series against Georgia. It's not that kind of team.
Exactly.
You're not going to get 20 possessions. So that's significant if he takes one or two possessions away from Richardson. All right, you got 28-17. I have 38-20. both Florida losses, unfortunately, for this one. A lot, though, to watch for. Of course, you kind of heard us, a lot of caveats, a lot of injuries, a lot of stuff going back and forth. And you heard us both say, essentially, that Georgia on film, every team theoretically is a team that can be beaten. But this one is, again, solid, solid football team, but not a juggernaut in totality. This is a team, I think, that will face some hurdles and some difficulties. They haven't faced any yet. Will they face some on Saturday? We'll tune in and find out.
Right. So even with Anthony Richardson, the best case scenario, I mean, I picked a score of 28, but that's almost the top end. Like, you can't allow Georgia to go over 30 points in this game.
You cannot. Florida's not going to win in that case. Yeah, for sure.
Outside just mass chaos, right?
That would be insane if that happened.
So if they're at 28, maybe you can match that or get to like 30 or something like that.
Sure.
In your best case scenario, but this has to be lower.
Yeah.
Right. So
it has to be. I mean, Georgia, again, top three against the run, top three sack rate, top five against the pass, top 3 yard. I mean, pick a stat. Remarkable. And I don't care who you think they played. Watch them on film. They're not going to give you anything.
And this Georgia team is better than last year, of course. But, man, just reminiscing about that Kyle Trask second quarter last year where he just eviscerated them.
Killed them. Well, here's the difference, Alan. Let's talk about this for 1 second because we got questions about this. If Kyle Trask were playing this football game, would your score be different?
Oh, yes.
Hands down.
Of course.
I think in this case for me, I think there'd be a coin flip.
Totally.
Because that's how good Kyle Trask is. And we'd still have to deal with Grantham's defense and everything else that we've talked about, but that's how good Trask is. And I think this is a team that, again, Trask was shredding teams when he had no protection ever.
Right. So better offensive line, worse receivers.
Yep.
But enough receivers to get the job done.
They're open. He'd be throwing these guys open. So that's how significant it is to have an excellent quarterback, and that's why you and I are so heavy on Richardson, is maybe Richardson puts out a Kyle-like Trask day, which he could. He did it against LSU, right? 4 drives in a row.
And he would do it differently. Like, obviously, yeah, he's going to hit in windows, but he's going to
different. But the key is he's capable of quarterbacking to all areas of the field. He threatens all areas of the field, and if he gets it rolling and he gets comfortable, there's no spot he cannot attack you on. And he's athletic enough that if one guy gets through, he could get away, which is what you need against the Georgia team. So,
totally.
You know, either way, like we said, a lot to watch for.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, let's do a schedule walkthrough. We'd usually do this in the midseason. Often we've done it last week. Just a lot on the schedule last week. So not the best second half of a schedule for Florida, right? We both just picked a loss to Georgia. But let's do it here just because I picked a loss and FSU is a little bit different, right? So I'll ask you first on all of these. South Carolina.
Win. South Carolina, not good this year. That would be unreal if Florida lost that one.
Right. That would be disastrous. Samford, of course, win.
Got to be a win on that one.
All right. Missouri, are you picked a win in the preseason? Or are you picking a win?
Yeah,
here?
Missouri, again, Missouri just not turned out to be the Missouri team you thought they would be this year. And that would be a really, really bad loss.
And they cannot stop the run at all.
Yep.
Nope. So it's hard for me to see Florida losing that game considering that Florida is excellent at running the ball.
Correct.
Okay, FSU, are you feeling any different about them right now?
I don't. They've because been playing better. I don't, because as much as I'm in the dark timeline right now, and I'm in the dark timeline, again, I'm going to use that from Grover all the time. I love it. Richardson is going to be the quarterback of this football team unless he gets injured. Like, he just has to be. So I see two paths. Emory Jones plays this game. We all lose our minds. It's the worst thing ever, gets smoked. And it's like either Dan Mullen rides out into the sunset and gets fired and quits and leaves because he plays Emory the whole season, or he's like, I have no choice but to play Anthony Richardson because the season is definitively over. I have no big games left he has to play. With all that being said, South Carolina, Stanford, Missouri, FSU to me are simple wins with a guy like Richardson, even with our defense, which can do crazy stuff. I don't think those teams can threaten us, but FSU is getting better each week. And an Emory Jones-led Florida team against FSU at this stage? Look, we've already put it out there. If we can lose to LSU, we can lose to Florida State. But I'm going to go with a win here.
Totally. I think so, too. I mean, the FSU team is getting better. They haven't played anybody recently who you would be, like, shocked that they won. They're beating Syracuse. They're beating, you know, they smashed somebody this past week. I forget what it was, UMass or something like that. They play Clemson this week. We'll get to that. But so I'm – Florida winning out is the most probable scenario in every direction. A loss to, in any of these games – totally upends whatever you think might happen to Dan Mullen. Let me just say that.
It's a great point.
Obviously, Samford is, there's no real danger there, but your seat becomes way, way hotter if any of these games go the way it shouldn't.
Correct. All right, the slate for week 8 coming down the pipe here for the pod. Unlike last week, we do have a very interesting slate this week. Let's start off with Virginia at number 25, BYU. BYU favored by 2.5 here, Alan.
I love Virginia in this game. I love their offense. Their quarterback, Brandon Armstrong, has not gotten enough credit. I mean, he's putting up huge stats. Bronco Mendenhall going back to BYU here.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Back to BYU. BYU obviously had a great season, slipped up here once. Virginia, like you said, offensive juggernaut, defensively, can't stop anybody. BYU, somewhere in between both those things. I don't know what to think about this. I like Virginia with you because BYU doesn't score a ton, 2.5. I don't know.
Join me.
I could regret it, but I'm going to join you with Virginia. I like your rationale. Florida State at Clemson. Clemson is still favored by 10. This is like two immovable objects meet each other. A team in FSU that typically, no matter what the spread is, you want to take the other side, and now a team in Clemson that you can't trust at all. What do you got here?
I don't like either scenarios.
Yeah, don't touch this game is a real answer.
Right, Clemson giving up 10 points to anybody right now feels bad. FSU beating anybody right now feels bad. And you know what? I keep thinking Clemson's going to zag, and I don't know if they can zag. You keep thinking every week they'll figure it out. Maybe they figure it out against FSU. I'll take Clemson. Not figure it out like totally, but enough so that they can stave off FSU.
There's at least hope now. New quarterback in town. The team might have a better week of practice. There's some change and shift that they may get. Florida State is feeling good about themselves right now, unlike Clemson. Clemson is like a weird team that they're having a down year, but they can boost your credentials and program. I think Florida State is going to be as dialed in as they can. And look, until Clemson proves they can beat somebody by more than 10, I don't care who the quarterback is. I have to take the other team, even if the other team is Florida State.
This is a reverse homer pick. I just couldn't in good conscience take FSU there.
I hate it. Fresno State at number 21, San Diego State. San Diego State favored by just 1.
This is a great game of, you know, teams we don't really pay attention to. Both these teams are really fun. They have both good records coming in the game. I like the San Diego State team a lot. They're fun to watch. So if you get a chance to watch them, do it. I'll take San Diego State here, -1.
I'm going to take Fresno State. I think they put a tougher schedule. I think they're ready for a game like this on the road, Fresno State.
Well, as you can see, it's basically a coin flippy kind of game.
Total coin flippy game, absolutely. Number 9, Iowa. Whew, fresh off the Purdue beatdown. At Wisconsin. Here we go, Alan. Wait for it. Wisconsin favored by 3.5.
Back from the dead. Whoo, man, that line tells me I should pick Wisconsin. But I'm not. I'm going to take Iowa.
I like it. I am going to pick Wisconsin. Common opponents are going to get me here. They just played the same team. Styles make matchups. You said it yourself. Wisconsin better suited to handle Purdue than Iowa. Both of these teams have terrible offenses, excellent defenses. I think the first team to 10 is going to win.
Man, I don't like this at all. There are so many coin flips. This is a really tough week to handicap.
Brutal, brutal tough week. Texas at number 16, Baylor. Dave Arnotta here, favored by, on purpose, -2.5.
Oh man. When I was putting this together, I was imagining picking this one. I would, of course, would like to pick opposite you with your Texas vibes.
Yeah, please stay.
Baylor's been, man, they've been feisty. I've liked them a lot. Texas in this spot, what are we going to get from them? Man, I'll take Baylor here.
And I'm sorry, Texas, but I'm going to do it again to you. Dave Aranda, of course, actual pronunciation of his name, outside of the inside joke. If you don't know it, you weren't listening long enough. But I'm just going to – I've decided I think I'm going to keep betting Texas until they get off the schneid. I can't think of a different strategy. I've lost like 10 times in a row now picking with them, against them. I have no idea, but they keep blowing leads, so perhaps they don't blow a lead this week and they get it figured out. Miami on the road at number 17, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh favored by 10, Alan.
I really like this Pittsburgh team, but as soon as you bet on them, they go the other way. So they might lose by 10 here, but I'll stick with Pitt.
Yeah, 10 feels good. They just beat Clemson by 10, but I'm going to take Miami. It feels like a letdown. Maybe they're riding too high. Number 19, SMU at Houston. Houston favored by 1.
I do not have a good feel for this Houston team. They're really tough, though. This is going to be a great game, but I feel more confident in SMU.
Yeah, I'm taking SMU as well. An ode here to Jackie Raymond, wife of JT Raymond.
New
parents, new mom, also SMU graduate and a big fan of the Ponies. Number 22, Iowa State, favored by 7. Your Clones on the road at West Virginia.
They tend to be better as the year goes on. This feels like a manageable number for them. This should be a good game, but I'll stick with the Clones.
I'm on the Clones as well. North Carolina, favored at number 11, Notre Dame. Notre Dame favored by 3.5.
I don't know which team is showing up, North Carolina or Notre Dame. I don't like either of these two teams. I'm feeling a little bit frisky about North Carolina this week, though.
The luck of the Irish has been strong this season. They feel overrated at 11, but they keep winning. I think the defense gets it done here. Number 12, Kentucky, favored by just 1 on the road against the Fighting Mike Leeches of Mississippi State.
This is the one I've been waiting to pick. I feel best about this, and I could be completely wrong. Give me Mike Leach and those Bulldogs.
I'm taking Kentucky. I feel like they know how to stop the air raid, and they're going to be able to run the ball on Mississippi State. Number 6, Michigan, Jim Harbaugh, on the road against number 8, the Fighting Chester Kimbrels of Michigan State.
This is going to be a close game, so if I'm getting points, I have to take Michigan State.
I'm taking Michigan State as well. They may not win, but they should be within that 4.5. Number 20, Penn State in a free fall against number 5, Ohio State. Ohio State favored by 18.5.
Easy. Give me Ohio State. They're rolling offensively. Penn State's wounded coming in here. I don't think they have anything for Ohio State. If this was at Penn State, I think they might get inside this number, but not in Columbus.
It's tough to take an 18.5 point spread when Penn State's defense is as good as it is, but I just think
But how many points is Penn State actually going to score in this game?
That's what I'm saying. I think this is a direction of where these two programs are going. We said this about Ohio State when they lost to Oregon. They have a lot of season in front of them. They have a very high ceiling, and they've been growing into that. I'm with you. Number 10, Ole Miss at Auburn. Auburn favored by 2.5. Number 18, Auburn by 2.5.
The Ole Miss crowd was really nervous about this Auburn game, I think for good reason. Auburn's really up and down, but I'm intrigued by this one. Again, I do not feel confident, but I'm going to have to go with Auburn.
I'm taking Auburn here as well. I think there's too many Ole Miss injuries. They're going to catch up with them in this game. I think Auburn is playing better football each week. Obviously, I watched him a lot on film against Georgia. I've seen him on film against some other opponents. Bo Nix seems to be turning a corner.
Bonix.
It seems like what Brian Harsin is doing there is starting to have an effect. I think this team believes, and I think Ole Miss has played a stretch of a lot of tough games in a row. It's taken a heavy toll on them. It's a hard place to play at Auburn. This would be, and I'll say it right now, Alan, this would be a great win for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. This would be very difficult for them to win this many games.
It'll be a good win in this either stretch. Way.
Whoever either
wins
way,
is feathering their cap for
either
sure.
Either way, but Auburn, I think the fresher team at home here will go with them. All right, Daytona Steve, his week 5 slate is as follows. He's got the 3-gamer. He is taking Michigan at the Fighting Chester Kimbrels. Shame on you, Daytona Steve. He's taking Georgia, favored by 14 over Florida. Is this like the he hates everyone line here?
This is the evil
line. And he's taking Ohio State over Penn State. The odds are 6-1 on that one. I don't love that, Daytona Steve, but perhaps you're going to be right because I'm not doing well this year myself. The cocktail party parlay, he's got Iowa at Wisconsin. He's at odds with us here, Al. He's totally at odds.
With you, at least.
Someone's going to be right. Michigan at Michigan State, again, featuring that one. He's got Cincinnati, 24.5 over Tulane. West Virginia over your clones here.
Man.
With +7. Georgia versus Florida. Wake Forest, 16.5 versus Duke. I like the Wake Forest line. Ohio State versus Penn State, 98-1 on that parlay. And the lock this week is Ohio State versus Penn State.
That.
So he's aligned on that one.
Okay. Lastly here, let's revisit our playoff predictions here and make some new ones for the rest of the season. So previously, this goes back in May, right? We did a little May episode, talked about coaching rankings, other things, and we did some playoff predictions. And hilariously, you didn't believe that you picked a certain team, but you did. Here's your playoff predictions. Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, right? And I went Clemson as well, Georgia, Oregon, and Iowa State. I like them coming out of the Big 12. Now, it's funny because halfway through this season, we're like, total chaos, right? Could be anybody. It's going to be wild. Feels like we're kind of shaping up maybe to the same old characters again. How do you feel about your playoff predictions?
I feel good about them minus Clemson, but no one would have seen this coming. And this is why sports are fun in a nutshell.
Totally.
Right? Nobody would have saw this coming. Their schedule was super easy. The ACC was, as predicted, soft. They were more talented, and they fell off a cliff, which is a free fall for them this season. Oklahoma has struggled. Their schedule also easy, favorable, which they're getting the benefit of. Same thing with Ohio State. Although the Big Ten is better, they're just so much more talented than the teams they face. And then, of course, Bama, you know, had a loss here, obviously, against A&M. Still has work to be done. At this point in time, what befuddled me, Alan, was I have been saying on this very podcast from the start of this season that Georgia was my favorite
year,
to win it all. And I even said on our second May podcast that Georgia was going to be the first team to beat Alabama, making him the first assistant to do so. That wound up being Fisher. I thought it would be the year where somebody would beat him. And so I don't know what happened to me in May that I didn't pick Georgia. I expressly said Georgia's my fifth team. And then I said on the next pod, I think the SEC is going to get two teams in. It's going to be Bama and Georgia. Georgia's going to win. So I apologize for the duality. I will remedy that right now with my new picks.
Do you want me to go first? I made you go first last time.
Go ahead, because I'm ready, because I was teeing myself up, but I'm ready. Go for it. I got you. Your revised picks, I'm typing them in now.
Okay, sticking with Georgia for sure.
Yep.
They feel like almost a lock, even if they lose to Bama.
Mm-hmm.
Bama, I think, is going to run the table. Gosh, are they going to get in with a loss to Georgia? They might beat Georgia. I'm going to pick that. Give me Bama. Give me Georgia. Give me Ohio State, certainly. I think they're going to run the table here in the Big 12. And then I think that last spot, is it going to be Cincinnati? I don't know. But I think Oregon now holds on. I'm going to stick with Oregon. They've got that win over Ohio State. I don't really trust them. But I definitely don't trust anybody from the Big 12, where the ACC is not getting anybody in, obviously.
No, of course not. All right. I am going to stick with my same exact list, except I'm going to swap Clemson for UGA. So Bama, Oklahoma, Ohio State.
So that
means
you think Bama's going to beat Georgia in the title game. That's the only way that happens, probably.
I don't know that that's going to happen, but I'm just looking at it thinking, I think Bama and UGA are the two best teams in the country, with Ohio State being talented team of that level. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that.
What you're predicting happening, though.
Well, I don't know that I'm predicting that happening. There's a lot of season left, though. Does it have to happen?
Yes.
Because what if Ohio
Bama
State
already has one
what
loss.
If Oregon and Ohio State lose? Do you think Oregon will be out if they take one more loss? There,
yeah.
Right. So what if Oklahoma loses and Ohio State loses again? What if it's Ohio State's interesting because that means Michigan could be undefeated. But I think Michigan's going to lose somewhere else. What I'm getting at is, would you put a two-loss Alabama team in over a one-loss anyone else? I think I would. If your loss is on the road at A&M.
But are you totally discounting Cincinnati? You don't think Cincinnati makes it in even over two-loss Bama?
Until I want them to. I have obviously been the proponent of a bigger, right, playoff. But until someone proves to me they're going to put a non-Power 5 team in, I'm not going to believe it. I don't know that they're going to put Cincy in over a two-loss Bama team. If your two losses are on the road to A&M, who's finishing the season hot, and then to an undefeated number one Georgia team. That seems tough. I could be wrong. Again, I'm just
I don't know either. I have no idea.
I think what we're saying is it's gonna shape up to be really interesting. There's a lot of scenarios that occur, but I'm going to stick. When given a choice, I'm going to stick with the two best horses, and maybe it sorts itself out. Maybe it doesn't.
I think Oklahoma loses. I think Big 12 cannibalizes itself.
That's very possible, of course. I think Oklahoma's a wild card for sure, and Oregon's a wild card in your case, but they're going to be favored in all their games.
Yeah. So this is a pick for me that Bama's going to up in Georgia in the title game.
Yeah.
And we'll get both of them in there.
It's very possible. I mean, yeah, that's the most likely path. But I'm just saying, I think there's a way that they can get in without that.
Okay.
There it is. Very nice. All right. Any other items?
I don't think so.
Okay. We'll get you home to your wife and daughter, son. As always, thanks for listening to the podcast. We certainly enjoyed bringing it to you. If you're going to the game, enjoy it this weekend. If you're watching it on television, enjoy it as well. As always, if you want to reach out to us, please do so anywhere on social media or Gmail. We will promptly write you back, and we look forward to being with you same time, same channel next week.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.